on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Day two of Republican control of the House. Well, not yet. I mean, they're not in power, but they still haven't made everything all better yet. When are they going to make things all better? This has to happen now. They promised. They swore. Right. Sure. That's going to happen. No, you know what? I hope we got the election out of our system. Because, frankly, I don't know how much more there is to talk about it. Because I still maintain not a hell of a lot changed. You may think I'm naive. I don't. Republicans will do what Republicans do. And Democrats will surrender. Because that's what Democrats do. Surrender. But there were a couple of things out there that got me thinking earlier today. You know, that dangerous, that thinking. I haven't gotten my hands on it, nor can I imagine actually paying money for it. But you know that Dim Leader's memoir is out there now, right? Yeah. Atne Ute Aitbre, if you know what I ime. But there's stuff in it that matters. And there's stuff in it that points in a direction where President Not Sure might possibly go if he actually wants to be president. That is, before they impeach him. And they might even impeach him for this. You know, bring it on, for God's sakes. I remember when Dim Leader said that, and it was stupid then because he was inviting, Iraqi irregulars to go to war with American uniformed service personnel. But this is different. Bring it on. Those are three words I'd actually like to hear out of President Not Sure's mouth. I don't think there's much chance of hearing it out of President Not Sure's mouth, however. Because President Not Sure is not that kind of president. Sure, but okay, what do I mean? The Republicans have the House of Representatives. The Harry Reid, the surrender monkey, still has titular control of the Senate, unless it is wrested from him when the new Congress comes in, and I pray God it is. Somebody needs to step up and lead, because Harry doesn't. Just doesn't. So that means that whatever gets passed in the House, unless the Democrats are in Senate Democrats are in a particularly surrenderous mood, and remember, we do have Blanche Manchin in there now, who will probably surrender to the Republicans at the first harsh word. He's a Republican anyway, so you know, why would you be surprised? Yeah, you know, that's why it was so important that he be elected, because he'd be an extra help us hold on to the majority in the Senate. Sure. You know, Blanche has always been dependent upon the kindness of strangers. But what that boils down to is the House will go brooga, brooga, brooga a lot, and Harry Reid will pee in his magic underwear a lot, and basically we're talking about 2 years of fighting a rear guard action in the Senate and praying that no Democrats die in office. In other words, stasis. or gridlock. But there is one place where a difference can be made, and there is one place where all the Republicans in the world can't do a God-blessed thing to stop us. There's only one problem with this plan, and I'll tell you outright, there's only one problem, and that is that this plan is predicated on President Not Sure growing a spine. I'm beginning to think that that spinelessness condition is somehow catching, and if he just never should have gotten around Harry Reid. Maybe he wouldn't have caught it. But let's work through this. The Republican Party cannot do a damned thing about anything that the Obama administration Justice Department chooses to do. They are guided only by the rules of professional conduct as it applies to lawyers, and particularly that section that applies to prosecutors. As I mentioned a little bit ago, Dim Leader's memoir is out. It has been released. And people are poring over it and reading it and producing excerpts of it. And there is some pretty sickening stuff. We touched on a little bit of it last night. He says that the Dim Leader, George Bush, said that the lowest part of his presidency was when that Kanye West called me a racist. Yeah, it wasn't while he was playing his Game Boy and we got attacked on September 11th, 2001, because I kept you safe, except the 3,000 people who died. But they're safely dead. Right? Well, there's another thing. There's another thing that's in this memoir. And in legal circles, we call it, not that I'm a lawyer, because I'm not, but in legal circles, it's frequently called a statement against interest. Statements against interest are admissible in court because they are statements made by a person, and they are deemed to be truthful because they run contrary to what the person saying it would be expected to say if the person knew that it was going to cause problems for them. You following? Statement against interest. And it comes in, and it is a statement against interest under the rules of evidence. It comes in and is not hearsay. It's not that it's accepted from hearsay. It is not hearsay, if I recall my rules correctly. Well, there's one of those in the, what's the name of this comic book? Decision Points. Sirloin Tips. I don't know. The Washington Post, carrying the story yesterday, in new memoir, Bush makes clear he approved use of waterboarding. R. Jeffrey Smith is the author. He's a Washington Post staff writer. And he writes, does R. Jeffrey, human rights experts have long pressed the administration of former President George W. Bush for details of who bore ultimate responsibility for approving the simulated drownings of CIA detainees, a practice that many international legal experts say was illicit torture. Well, it's not just the international people. There are lots of Americans like you and me who say that it was torture. Mainly because waterboarding is torture. Roundly recognized as torture. Undeniable that it is torture. So I guess the book is coming out. I was wrong. The book is coming out Tuesday. Decision Points, Sirloin Tips, whatever. And in the book, Dim Leader makes abundantly clear that he approved, not after the fact, but before the fact, he approved the torture of people who would be captured. In the book, Bush recounts, says R. Jeffrey, Bush recounts being asked by the CIA whether it could proceed with waterboarding Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who Bush suspected, who Bush said was suspected of knowing about still pending terrorist plots against the United States. Bush writes that his reply was, "Damn right." And he says he would make the same decision again to save lives. That comes from someone close to Bush who has read the book. See, this is new stuff. Because previously, Dim Leader had said that, well, yeah, he approved the enhanced interrogation techniques. Lurch! But that he did so after Justice Department officials and other aides assured him they were legal. This is different. This is George W. Bush approving of the torture of human beings contrary to the law of the United States of America before the torture had commenced. This really is the what did he know and when did he know it part of the program. He knew there was going to be torture, and he knew it before the torture was perpetrated. This is important. This attaches a level of legal criminal culpability to George W. Bush that is inescapable. He's selling books with this in it. He is admitting that he is a war criminal. And what's more, in admitting it, he is taking his finger and, "I'm going to poke my finger in your eye, Barack Obama, because I know that you're a big old wussy and you don't have the guts to prosecute me. Pink! What are you going to do? I'm going to knock the chip off your shoulder, Barack. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You big old sissy. Gonna come prosecute me?" Well, I submit to you that the moral answer to that question is yes, George W. Bush must be prosecuted. And frankly, it's good strategy, too. You call John Boehner, if you're president, not sure. You know, why am I even doing this? Barack Obama does not have the guts to do this. Because this would take a little bit of courage. But you pick up the phone and you call John Boehner, and you say, "Pumpkinhead, how you doing? We need to talk." Now, Pumpkinhead, I've been talking with my Attorney General, Eric Holder, and he says that your buddy George W. Bush is guilty as sin of committing torture and that he violated the law of the United States of America. And what's more, Pumpkinhead, Mr. Holder tells me that he's got indictments ready to present to a grand jury, just sure as absolutely. Now, Pumpkinhead, I don't want to hear another word about investigations of this administration. I don't want to hear another word about indictments or impeachment. Because you know the Republicans are already out there saying, "Well, I would advise President Obama not to shred any documents." Again, that's another one of those moments where if there was even two or three iodi of Harry Truman in him, President Not Sure would come out and say, "What? You don't want me to shred any documents? You mean like the way your boy Count Dicula had entire fleets of trucks driven up to the vice presidential residence at the Naval Observatory and had the shredders going so damn hard there was smoke coming out of them? You mean, Pumpkinhead, you don't want me to be a-doing that? Well, golly, Sergeant Carter. See, that's what a guy with guts does. You stare at him, and you stare him down, and you wait for him to blink. And that's the thing. These right-wing POSs will blink. And I'm kind of ashamed of myself for suggesting that the indictment of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney should be used as a bargaining chip. Because the fact of the matter is, if we were actually a nation of laws and not of persons, the impeachment proceedings would have begun during the Bush presidency. But Bush isn't president anymore, and Count Dickula isn't vice president anymore, and impeachment is not an issue with them. Now it is simply a matter of a prosecutor taking a case to a grand jury and seeing what they come up with in the way of indictments. And the indictments will simply be for felonies. And there will be no immunity. He's out of office. He is not immune. Neither George nor Count Dickula are immune from being charged under the criminal law for their violations of that criminal law. And to the best of my knowledge, for war crimes like this, there is no statute of limitations, although I stand, God will be more than happily corrected if it turns out there is one. What did Marshal Foch say during the First World War? The enemy is on my left, the enemy is on my right, the enemy is in my center. I have them right where I want them, I attack. Wasn't that the taxi cab army that saved Paris? Poor President, not sure. So scared. So scared. And so surrounded by mice that he doesn't understand that the presidency is an elephant. Political party symbols notwithstanding. How sad. But it's there. The case very well might be a slam dunk. Again, you have admissions in a published book offered as truth and fact. Mr. Bush, you state in your book, it's true, is it not, that you state in your book that you authorized the waterboarding of detainees before it was ever done to them. That's correct, isn't it? Just answer the question, sir. Well, you see, it's a yes or no question, Mr. Bush. Simple enough, just answer the question. Did you or did, well, I guess I did. Is that a yes, Mr. Bush? Yes. You admit that you ordered the torture of detainees. Well, I didn't think it was torture. Mr. Bush, that is for the jury to decide, not you. You ordered people waterboarded before they were ever subjected to it. You okayed this before it was ever done. Is that correct, sir? You can't handle the truth. I saw that on a movie once. Here, wait a minute. That feller went to prison, didn't he? I want to take a fifth. You mean you want to take the fifth, sir? No, I want a fifth. I quit drinking when I was 40 years old, but I'm ready to start again. Oh, my God, my goose is cooked. These aren't complicated cases. This isn't like some financial crime where you've got to have a forensic accountant to go over every last nickel and dime of a fraudulent transaction. No, no. This is straight up stuff. This is prove the elements, get the conviction, send him to prison. You know an indictment could be had. You know the old saying, a federal prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich. And if a federal prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich, a federal prosecutor could certainly indict something with the brains of a ham sandwich, namely George W. Bush. There are times in this life when you either fight back or you surrender to the ignominy that you make for yourself. This is one of those times. Barack Obama will never have a better opportunity to write his name in the history books. Because otherwise, he's a one-termer. They won't get to impeach him, or they might impeach him in the House, but they won't get to convict him in the Senate. That takes 67 votes, and there might just be enough people in the Senate to vote against it to keep that from happening. They will not remove him from office via the impeachment process, no matter how badly they might want to. But I wonder if there's anybody in the White House with enough guts to look at Barack Obama and say, this is your time. They think you're beaten. They think you're weak. They think you've got nothing. When you've still got the entire apparatus of the executive branch. This is the time, Mr. President, for you to be president. And you know what? He does. Well, this is a witch hunt. He's obviously on a witch hunt against George Bush. No, George Bush published a book in which he admitted information that we did not heretofore have. And upon his admission, he made a prosecution an absolute necessity. This is bragging over torture. This is bragging over committing war crimes. This is bragging. And you know what? That's what criminals do. That's what criminals do. They brag. Sooner or later, they're going to feel all froggy about what they got over on the authorities. And they will brag. Am I wasting my breath? Am I wasting my time? Probably. In terms of, you know, president not sure actually doing anything. Yeah, I am. But we have to make it clear that the possibility exists, that he does not have to go down in history as merely a dark-skinned cipher who happened to hold the office of president for a little while against the odds before it was turned back over to the white people. We just have to. We have to know what is possible. And there's some line or saying out there somewhere about politics being the art of the possible. And this is more than possible. There's another story out there for Thorn in the Side Thursday that I hope to get to later in the night. We'll go back. We'll go to the phones and your calls right soon here. You know the number, 877-443-2366. That's toll-free, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And the other story has a little something to do with Google. The Google and the YouTube. And the First Amendment. And it's another one of those comparison and contrast moments of which I am so manifestly fond. But I welcome your comments. I welcome your thoughts. Is there anything wrong? Is there any reason at this stage of the game not to indict Dim Leader? Is there a political reason not to indict Dim Leader? Is there a legal reason not to indict Dim Leader? Have I missed something here? Nancy Pelosi, come January, is going to be gone, and her table will be gone, and the impeachment that she took off of it will be gone. And Punkin'Hade Boner will have him a new table, and it's going to have impeachment all over it, sunshine. And there is only one way to stop that kind of bullying. There's only one way. And that is to show them that you are tougher than they are. And that's exactly what the indictment of George W. Bush and Richard B. Dick Big Time Count Dickulacini would accomplish, you see. Oh, I do think we've got rather an interesting thorn in the side Thursday ahead of us. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing today?
What's up, Susan?
Well, I got to thinking. One way to maybe convince these nice people that maybe they should walk a little wary, treat them to a demonstration of karma. You know, what goes around comes around.
Now, I'm well aware of it, yes.
For the past 18 months, we have watched the Senate Republicans basically sit and squat in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. What goes around can come around. And we have the majority in that Senate, and that means nothing happens. Shut it down. Anything they want to pass, kill it.
You mean filibuster it? Every blessed thing that comes from the House of Representatives, filibuster it?
Everything. I don't care how mundane, kill it. Treat them to their own medicine.
Do you think there's anybody in that Senate with that kind of guts? Do you remember when Bernie Sanders tried to filibuster something? And Harry, it had to do with the healthcare debate. And Harry Reid slapped. No. It was Bernanke. It was the nomination of the renomination of Bernanke. And Bernie Sanders tried to filibuster it, and Harry Reid slapped him down a rat hole.
Well, that's the deal. We've got to provide these guys with spines. Now, the deal, here's one thing that might make this possible. All those blue dogs that have no spines.
Well, in the House, half of them are gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones in the Senate that got voted out are gone. The only real progressives that got voted out were Feingold and Grayson, really.
Well, there was one in Illinois, a good man.
Yeah. But most of the progressives hung on. It was the blue dogs who paid.
Right, because why have an imitation Republican when you can have a real one?
Sure. Okay, so fine. Let's show them fun and games. Let's play them at their own game. Filibuster. Filibuster everything. If it doesn't come from President Obama, filibuster it. Let's see how John Boehner likes having everything filibustered. How long do you think it would be before he's up in front of the cameras weeping?
Yeah. But the thing is, the cameras will respond sympathetically to Boehner's weeping, or to chinless Mitch McConnell's weeping, because they respond that way whenever a Republican weeps. But then again, how many times when things that we wanted were getting filibustered in the United States Senate by the Republicans, how many times did Harry Reid go before the cameras? I can't remember more than once or twice tops where a camera crew was standing in front of him, and he said, all we want is an up or down vote.
Yeah. He didn't do that.
Clueless people, Susan. We are talking about clueless people.
No, not just clueless. Dumber than a box of rocks.
See, I don't think Harry Reid is dumb. I just think that he doesn't have the stomach for the fight.
I have to tell you.
Now, I mean, if it was me, if he's fighting another Democrat, he's got spine by the trailer truckload.
Yeah, I have to tell you that as far as I was concerned, the one Democrat that deserved to go down was Harry Reid. I was hoping he'd lose.
Well, if he hadn't been running against a lunatic, he might have.
Yeah, I just didn't want him to lose to Sharon Engel. Because she was crazy as a sprayed roach. But if they had just run a halfway sane candidate, I would have been cheering for that one. Instead, they ran a maniac. But he was the one Democrat who deserved to lose.
And, you know, I think it was pointed out on this program last night, that there was a lot of money thrown into Harry Reid's campaign that was sucked away from good people like Russ Feingold that could have helped save him. Yeah, Russ Feingold was endorsed by every major newspaper in the state of Wisconsin. And still, the Johnson guy won.
Yeah, because he had those huge amounts of money. And I also think that... did you see the rip that Rachel Maddow did on, what's his face, that twit from Ohio?
Ayotte?
No, he calls himself a Democrat, but he's not. The one who inherited his seat because his daddy was...
No, you've lost me. I can't come up with a name. Somebody will have it, though.
Oh, you know, he's a real famous name. Anyway, she just ripped him because, in effect, he said he wasn't going to run, kept all of his money, rather than award it to candidates who could have used it, and in effect guaranteed the seat went to the Republicans. And boy, Rachel got on TV and just ripped him a new one. and then he goes on television and just ranks on the Republican Party up one side and down the other. He was the one that wanted to be vice president and wasn't picked, and so he still peeped.
No, why can't I come up with that name? I know you're talking about.
Yes, no.
Well, it will be interesting to say the lame duck session will be interesting, and then seeing now that they are exiled to being the opposition party, it will be interesting to see if the Democrats, working uphill as we all understand that they must, because they will not receive the favorable media treatment that the Republican minority did.
Mm.
But it'll be interesting to see if they even try.
What I want to see is people calling up Boehner's office and I want to see them blogging and the whole nine yards every day demanding, A, his birth certificate, B, jobs immediately from day one. I want them to, okay, where's the jobs? You haven't given us jobs right now. Give me the jobs, job. Where's the jobs? And I want it, no, right from the beginning. Where's the jobs? And then, C, I want them demanding that he fly coach from Washington, D.C. to his home state.
I would prefer he took a small aircraft like maybe a Piper Cub or a little Cessna.
That's even better. But they made such a big deal about Nancy Pelosi. Fine, he can fly commercial jet and coach.
By the way, Clayton writing in, Susan, $10 million were kept away from Russ Feingold, he says.
Yeah, and that's just
Think that could have come in handy against all that Citizens United money?
Oh, you know. Evan Bayh, that's the name of the
Yeah, Indiana, that's what, yeah.
Yeah, it's Indiana, sorry. And, you know, he...
Oh, he's hollering about extending the Bush tax cuts, and... Yeah, he just needs to sit down and shut up.
Sit down, shut up. But, you know, he goes over to Fox and the whole nine, and he's just he's an ass. But I want people screaming to his office, screaming on the internet immediately. Why haven't you gotten the jobs back yet? Why haven't you fixed the economy yet? Within a week. Don't give him any time. They didn't give Barack Obama any time.
Yeah, and again, that's another one of those Barack Obama moments. Have a press conference once a week. Well, let's see, we're 7 days into the new Congress, and the Republicans still haven't fixed anything. When are you going to fix it, Boner? Hey, Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, and demand his. I want to see his birth certificate. Just because he's orange does not mean he's a legal citizen.
Well, you know, I mean, we know that all brown people come from Kenya. I don't know where the orange people come from, but who knows if we even have it may be like Linear A. We may not be able to translate his birth certificate. But by God, we need to see the, and not just any birth certificate, we need to see the long form.
The long form, yes, exactly. I want to see it.
You know, I'm going to miss, Alan Grayson has a lame duck session coming to him.
Oh,
wouldn't it be lovely? Because I can see Alan having enough guts to do this, introducing legislation demanding that John Boner produce his long-form birth certificate.
I just hope he just cuts loose with both barrels. And you know what I really hope? Hey, by the way, Oregon has a blue governor. We have a Democratic governor. The NBA tweet from the Republican that we were so scared of.
Yeah.
Lost.
And you managed to keep DeFazio as well, which is a good thing.
And message to Alan Grayson. Your district in Florida apparently doesn't appreciate you. You come to Florida, come to Oregon, we'll love you to pieces. We'll elect you over and over and over because you are just our type of people. You come to Oregon.
That might not sit too well with some Oregon politicos, Susan.
Oh, I can because there's a district that is red. And they've been inflicting themselves, you know, gotten inflicted with a Republican.
But you got to remember, Alan Grayson is originally a New Yorker. He's in Florida for the weather, not the politics.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, we don't have all that snow here either. So he could come here and, you know,
tell that to the people who had to dig out of feet of it a couple of years ago. Who are you kidding?
Hey, I'm one of them. I ended up with a busted ankle. But,
I know. That's what I'm saying.
But those are freak freak storms. You know, you don't.
No, that was a function of climate change, and you're going to be seeing more of them, Susan. I hate to tell you, but.
You know, we would just love him to pieces, or he could come to, he could go to California. I would just love it. Can you imagine Alan Grayson hitting orange?
No, I'll tell you what, it'd be fun to have him, be having a nice sunny Arizona, driving the likes of Jan Brewer nuts.
Oh God, I would give money. I'd pay money to see that. I really would. You know, you could sell tickets. You're really good.
Gets warm in Texas, too. That could be fun. But this is all entirely too speculative. It would be kind of fun, though, if he would introduce legislation demanding that John Boehner produce his long-form birth certificate, though.
Yeah, I hope he opens up with both barrels because, like you said, it's lame duck. What bothers me is you know what's going to happen. Don't ask, don't tell is dead.
Oh, climate legislation is dead. Any meaning, everything is dead. Except maybe extending the Bush tax cuts for the rich. That's the priority. That's job one for the Republican Party. And the thing is, as I said last night, the Democrats may try to beat him to the punch and say, look, we're tax cutting idiots too.
Yeah. You want to see how fast they can go down the tube. You put those tax cuts for the rich in, and they will go down in a bloodbath the next electoral bloodbath the next time around. That'll make this one look like a tea party.
Ha, 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 ha.
Pardon me.
Yeah. Well, Susan, I'm awfully glad to hear from you, dear, and you have been in our thoughts. And I'll only ask, are you getting along okay?
I'm hanging in there. I think one of the Donald would have really wished he could have voted, but I think it would have tickled him. We held his memorial service on Election Day. And since we vote by mail here, everybody had already voted.
Well, you have been much in our thoughts, Susan. Much in our thoughts. Welcome back.
I really appreciate your help and support. And to everyone who emailed me, I want to thank you, and I will be answering you individually as soon as I can, but it's going to take a little bit.
More than understandable. Susan, have a good evening, dear.
You too, and give my love to Agnes.
I sure will. Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And we move on. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey. Well, that was nice to hear Susan on the phone there. Bless her.
Good to have her back.
Man. But, I'm just stunned. I don't know why I am, but the sort of signaling that, you know, he's willing to extend the, is this for real? I can't even believe this. I'm thinking, is this the most feckless president ever? I'm sorry. I'm starting to really wonder about this.
Well, as you noted last night, the lame duck session kind of has to extend them if they're going to be extended because they sunset on December 31st, right?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And the thing is that he could just keep his mouth shut and just say, yeah, whatever, 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 and let them go ahead and work through it. But no, he has to interject and say, and meanwhile, they're saying, well, we don't give a F about you. We want you gone in public. With Mitch McConnell, you know, saying we want him gone. That's priority for us. Don't stop. Don't shred papers. You know, they're lining up.
I know I'm being a little bit of a smartass, Sandra, but what would be the harm in having President Not Sure stand up and say something like I suggested? Oh, you don't want me to shred stuff? You mean like Dick did?
Well, it's incredible. I mean, I'm just sort of sitting here thinking, okay, we're already hearing about them planning their investigations, and we were subjected to Nancy Pelosi in power talking about taking shit off the table. Like, almost as a condition for her to be speaker, when she didn't have to answer to nobody because she just won the damn election. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, I'm just sort of just twisted here because,
Well, institutionally, what I think you're pointing to, Sandra, is the fact that the Democratic Party does not understand what it means to have real power.
Well, that seems to be apparent, but more special is the sort of decoupling from their traditional base. I think it's complete because they have nowhere to turn now. And this is the thing that's even more frightening, because who do they represent? What do they stand for? We know what the Republicans are. They make it quite clear. They're proud of it. They do what they do. But see, what I'm scared of now is the weak ass White House for the next 2 years and all this money from Citizen United. Shit, they may get a supermajority. In all branches, they might get the presidency and a supermajority in both houses next time around. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
I mean, this is my fear now. I've been thinking about it, and I'm just thinking, okay, well, this could just be because I'm looking at Obama thinking, okay, do I need to just write you off? And then I think about that, I'm thinking, damn, if he doesn't show any fight, there's no reason why the Democrats won't lose even more seats.
Well, you know, Malloy wrote him off last night.
Well, no, that was, yeah, Malloy was out there with that one. I'm not sure about that whole strategy because that also requires some balls and spine. So I don't even know, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so he don't seem to have a clue about the party at large either. Have you noticed that? Because that's fine, though. That's what happened to him. He suffered because of Obama and his madness.
Well, I don't know. I'm beginning to wonder, conversely to what you just said, Sandra, what does he have a clue about?
Well, the man is going to stand there and talk about making nice with people who repeatedly, over and over again, from day one, said, we want your ass, and proceeded to do just that, and the best he can come out with. I mean, I understand him saying, oh, I heard the voters. But that's as far as he should have said. That should have been traditional response to midterm business. That's what you do. But beyond that, for him to suggest that I'm willing to continue to throw the economy under the bus in the name of getting along with these people, that's like borderline mental disorders at this point.
You know me, Sandra. I've always got a cheap movie reference. You remember the Will Smith vehicle Independence Day? You know, where the aliens invaded Earth and everything. And
Oh, yes.
And they went to the secret underground lab in Roswell or wherever, and they'd captured one of the baddies.
Yeah.
And it was telepathically communicating through Brent Spiner, Commander Data from Star Trek.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, too much detail. But Jeff Daniels played the president, I think it was, and he said, what do you want from us, to the alien? And the alien looks at him and says, die.
Right, yeah, no, listen.
How is that different from Mitch McConnell? Die.
Exactly. No, it's just kind of just over the top. It's, you know, I have to go off the beaten track here for a second because you mentioned a movie. Listen, my head almost exploded because Arianna Huffington was on TV talking about the Obama administration and either Geithner or Sumner. She was saying, yeah, he was going all over TV talking about growth in spring like Chauncey Gardner.
Oh!
Because,
are we ahead of the curve, Sandra, or what?
Hey, I had to replay it because I said, no, she did not say growth in the spring like Chauncey Gardner and compared it to the Obama economic team. I was through. I thought about you. I thought, damn, should I call? What should I do?
And I got a computer breakdown going because otherwise I would be digging furiously to find that clip just to play it.
I don't know. Listen, I'll see if I can dig it up and send it to you because it was just so surreal because it was like, yes, thank you. Because that's priceless. That movie is amazing.
And you know what? For those who would like to, if you've got a Netflix account, you can view it online. It'll you don't have to wait for it to be delivered. If you've got a Netflix account, you can just watch it, and it's worth the watch.
Oh, and it's timeless, though, as far as the machinations in Washington. And that movie was like Peter Sellers' last film. It was like 1981, wasn't it? I mean, it was the early 80s.
It was it was his last or among his last.
It was close to the end, and it's just an amazing. I even I saw the movie, but I even went and read the book because I was like, are you kidding me with this? So
and it was pretty, and the two track fairly closely.
He wrote the screenplay.
Yeah, Jerzy Kosinski.
Yeah, I think he did. For something, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. Anyway, enough with that. But I just thought you would have been totally.
Oh, that's precious.
You would have been chuffed looking at that. That was crazy.
Oh, and by the way, it was Bill Pullman who played the president in Independence Day. Marty's, I've got a staff of fact checkers out there. Yeah, it was Bill Pullman.
Yeah, that's almost as good as
But the only difference is that the alien in the hateful alien in Independence Day is slightly more appealing to look at than Mitch McConnell.
I'm also getting Mars Attacks all blended in because that was another one that was crazy.
But when the alien just die.
Yeah.
I mean, why do they? Because that's inherent in Mitch McConnell's words. He wants, and it's not just Mitch McConnell, it's Boehner, it's Cantor, it's the entire Republican structure, it's all those idiots who showed up at town hall meetings armed to the damn teeth, Sandra. They want him to die.
I just don't understand where the advisors are, and it's just, because we've seen how he operates, we know he's not going to develop into a Clinton all of a sudden. Because Clinton, worked around their asses badly because he's just that clever. I'm not agreeing to what he ended up doing to us, but he certainly was able to play them pretty well.
Well, it's because he was a redneck.
Right.
Redneck, and Newt Gangrene's a redneck, and rednecks know rednecks.
Right.
And there's good rednecks and bad rednecks.
Well, I just, I'm not too sure, I'm not too sure. I mean, I don't even know if I agree with what Malloy was saying, but I was close to agreeing when he started talking about how, because of, the Negro status and how you have to operate in this society, I started thinking, damn, that's messed up. But who the hell knows? The accommodating shit had me thinking of lawn jockeys and Uncle Tom and Song of the South. As soon as I started thinking about Song of the South, I was like, damn, where is the eye pick? I mean, the ice pick. You know what I'm saying?
The only thing that was missing out of all that was a reference to that Saturday Night Live skit about Uncle Jemima's sour mash corn liquor.
And it's really bad. I hate to go on the racial track with Obama, but I'm like, dude.
There's got to be something out there to explain the dysfunction.
It is dysfunction. Bring it back into something coherent. You're absolutely right, Bob.
Because this White House is clearly badly dysfunctional.
Where's that freak who wrote Bush on the bed or the couch? He needs to pop up with something with Obama now.
Yeah, because and the thing is, this is so much. He diagnosed, what was his name? Can't remember now. I'll get an email. But he diagnosed, and I think accurately, George Bush as a dry drunk.
Right.
But maybe I'm actually conjuring a horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. What is the diagnosis for Obama? He's behaving. Okay, sorry, not trying to be misogynistic or anything, but he's behaving like a battered wife.
Well, not only that, but he's also, I'm just sort of trying to put myself, because I am a person of color, in fact, a Negro, and I'm thinking, there's a chameleon element to my existence, because, I sort of move in kind of all kinds of really bizarre circles, and so there's different masks to put on. Now, I realize that everyone does that to a certain extent in society, but I'm thinking, you know how he kind of busted out and he said one thing and he got slammed? We ain't never seen that again with the Gates. He had the nerve to say something smart about white people, and he was blasted, and it kind of went away forever from the looks of it.
Well, the same thing happened with Rush Limbaugh right after the inauguration and after the, I hope he fails. They came out with six guns a-blazing, and Limbaugh barked back, and they wet themselves and ran away.
And never forget the Shirley Sherrod thing. I always file that away when I think about these people. And that, to me, informs me a lot about this administration. So that's why I'm not terribly hopeful. Now, I know some of the diehard Obama supporters are all still on the 12-dimensional chess that might be going on, but... Yeah, no.
No, because, okay, cheesy movie reference number three. This is the part of Monty Python and the Holy Grail where Bravely Bold Sir Robin says of the killer rabbit, perhaps it would confuse it if we ran away more. To which Arthur responds, oh, shut up and go and change your armor.
No, but seriously, have you heard any follow-up after it was reported all over the world what Mitch McConnell said? Has there been any response from the White House?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, the only thing I know that's happening is some sort of meeting on the 18th with Obama and these cretins.
Yeah, that's when they're going to deliver terms.
Okay. It's just incredible. What Obama should have said was, well, this deficit is so high, we need to let all the tax cuts expire and come at them like that and say that now what? In fact, he should just say, now what? Go Negro on them for a minute. That would just be great. In the meanwhile, he sort of, they're upset about the turnout, but, you know, he did nothing for black folks for the past 2 years. He's going to come hat in hand. It's like, and cut.
Yeah, I think everybody who appreciates, who wants to fight back, and for whom he's the last opportunity we have to fight back, we're all kind of waiting for that 1968 Mexico City moment from him.
Well, listen.
But you know, he ain't gonna put that black power salute fist up in the air.
No, some of the black blogs that I kind of follow, yeah, people are like, dude, you know, they starting to get really kind of like, where's the fight? You know, this is sort of a question that's starting to pop up.
Oh, I haven't been to Black Commentator lately. I actually do go.
They wrote him off. He's
long time ago. Yeah,
he's just a corporatist and Wall Street the hoe.
What about Jack and Jill Politics? They got a little bent with them too.
Yeah, that's always that's always a surprise. That's his people. That's his base.
Is that what we're waiting for? Everything's going to be okay because the black vote is going to get all worked up in 12.
And no, listen. Do you know what the state of the black community is? He ain't done shit. This sort of will all help with the economy and everyone else will be helped. But no, I don't know. I think the black vote, yeah, of course, they probably will vote for him. But it's a bit depressed, like every other part of the real Democratic Party. But anyway.
But I tell you what, happy days are here again because the Republicans managed to actually get two African-American Republicans into the Congress this election.
I know, I saw them...
That crazy bastard West in Florida, and I forget who the other one is.
I saw them House Negroes, that one from South Carolina.
Is he South Carolina? Okay, because Alan West is the one in Florida who has the security clearance higher than Barack Obama's.
Oh, God, speaking of Florida, listen, can you imagine a state with no income tax, collapsing property tax, and every single office is now Republican, headed by a governor who was done for ripping off Medicare. That state's heading for a depression. What do you think?
Well, I think, and they've been on that road for a while.
No, but I mean, seriously, there's no revenue. So, and you just cutting. I'm just wondering, the unemployment is 12% officially, and they ain't got nothing but Republicans.
You know, that's one of the things, though, Sandra, and I mean this in all seriousness, one of the things that we don't know what it looks like. We don't know what it looks like when a state collapses. We haven't seen it. You know, for those with a long enough memory, they might remember the financial troubles of New York or Cleveland, and those are cities. And I'm not making light of it or diminishing those serious times. But we have not seen a state outright collapse. And you're absolutely right. Florida is not a well place.
No, it's not. I mean, fiscally speaking, all the inputs are not. They're really sorry, and there's no way that group of politicians are going to do anything to sort of address those concerns. So I guess it's going to be gated communities.
And what falls by the wayside?
And the hell with everybody else. I mean, I don't know.
Because what falls by the wayside is not services to gated communities.
Oh, no, but see, what could happen, though, is because you said, like you said, we haven't seen that situation, it just means a bailout from the feds, right? Which might drag everybody else down into a depression.
But you know what? If the Bush tax cuts are made permanent, there won't be a bailout from the feds, because the Republicans, Sandra, don't believe in bailouts from the feds.
Right, but they don't seem to be making much noise about helicopter Republican Bernanke. This bitch is unloading fake money like there's no tomorrow. And the stock markets were happy about it, but it ain't helping nobody else. In fact, it's going to make everything much more expensive for the rest of us when the dollar dives and imports become expensive. They're trying to say that exports will be cheaper. What exports?
Yeah, exactly. What are we making? What?
I mean,
nuclear reactors to India? We can't make enough of those to... No.
I don't know, but I'll let you go, but I noticed that there's they had rigged up all of Greece. There's bombs everywhere. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yeah, and we haven't spent any time on the bombing scare of...
The Yemen thing?
Yeah, Greece found... Yeah, the Yemen thing, and then Greece found a bomb, and France found a bomb that was 17 minutes from going off.
Yeah, but ain't that all domestic, though?
No, that stuff was headed for here.
The Yemen thing is just, of course, I'm always suspect, because I'm like, oh, let me see. Election failure, we turn to some horror show we can do foreign policy. I mean, that's a formula for embattled executives. So,
Jesus Christ, I just looked at this. The Dow finished up almost 220 points?
Yes, I'm telling you. It's everything is just straight up criminality now, because it's criminal what Bernanke is doing. You know, this ain't helping nobody except for the rich to get richer. They seem to think we're in some deflationary environment. I mean, but look at the price of oil now.
Well, I got an email from one of our listeners, Phase 5, from the chat room, who's in Australia. And I could almost hear his sense of disbelief. He just sent me a note and said, "Dear God, Bob, the Australian dollar's worth more than the American dollar. Not by much, but it is."
No, the dollar had a couple of weeks ago it was like 85. Now it's in the 70s, and I'm not too sure what the end game is here. I think the Fed is out of control. They don't know what the hell they're doing.
Well, it's certainly not going to play very well with our trading partners, as we like to call them, the European Union, the yen, and frankly the Chinese yuan. None of those are going to like a plummeting dollar.
Well, the European Union. I mean, Germany is flexing its muscles big time. I'm like, hello. They're trying to do exactly what people who were against the Lisbon Treaty said would happen. Now they're trying to augment it so they can control, what's going to happen with these countries with deficits. So it's like a creeping treaty is what they call it. Anyway, the Germans are trying to make it so everyone gets a haircut. And I didn't realize that all these bailouts completely shielded the banks.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Well, in Greece, the bailout that they got is requiring only the taxpayers completely to try to pay down these debts. The bondholders aren't required to take any kind of haircut whatsoever.
Oh, my God. I did not know that.
Right. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, no wonder Germany is freaking out, because the Greeks will never be able to pay down that debt unless there's some give and take on both sides. So this is what the world we're living in, because that's straight up criminal. That's gangster.
And, you know, there are things that ripple away from that, Sandra, that I don't know. I mean, you're good at this stuff. Me, not so much. But there's ripple effects that come away from this that we may not begin to comprehend.
Oh, yeah, no. It is very difficult to comprehend because of the political economy. It's so hard to separate the politics from the economics now. And, you know, you got this sort of like a permanent state of rioting in Europe now. Have you noticed?
Yep.
You know, and I'm like, okay, what's going on? So, anyway, I know we're all over the place, but it's really hard to sort of make any sense of this. But I'm really concerned about President Obama, I have to say. I don't really know what's going on.
I don't know if he, and that's, I think, what's most disturbing to a lot of us. We don't know if he knows what's going on.
Because, you know, I don't know. I know I keep repeating it, but he seriously is talking about finding common ground. I think I'm going to be ill. I mean, so much so that...
No, see, I can't even make my head accept that. If I understand and you understand and people who work for a living and eke out their existence for their daily bread understand that you can... I mean, like I said the other... Ronald Reagan beat us over there. Yeah, well, we will not negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah, until he pulled... Well, okay, yeah.
But you get my point. How is it that we know what the Republicans intend for Barack Obama, and he doesn't?
Well, I tell you who else knows.
I mean, this is like... this is like the Fisher King. This is the guy who, you know, back in pagan days is sitting there having all of anything he wants. You want another steak? More hummingbird tongues, Your Eminence? And doesn't realize that they're going to have a big bonfire and kill his ass.
Yeah. No. And then a part of me, you know, going to conspiracy, I mean, has he been sort of sat down and told, you know, you need to keep your black ass, your mouth shut, you need to shut the hell up, sit down.
Because, no, I think that's the November 18th meeting.
Okay, well, I don't really understand, because he has the presidency, and I understand that it's been diminished, you know, as our economic power declines and whatnot, but...
Well, it damn sure wasn't diminished for 8 years under Bush, it was imperial.
No, not only that, but like I said, Bush knows what time it is with Obama. If he's out there saying, yeah, damn, Skippy, I tortured, what you going to do about it? Nothing.
That has to be the way it is, doesn't it? I mean,
not only that, but it's really disturbing because the nothing has, it doesn't have anything to do with Obama. The Justice Department should be saying, okay, Mr. Bush, this is what has to happen.
That's what I'm talking about. This is at best, this is second year of law school level evidence class. When you read something like that, you go, oh look, we've got an admission by a party opponent.
And it's government one, as far as how the government should respond to it. I mean, the Department of Justice is an autonomous entity that is in its power to respond to something like this. And it's just like, hello? Bueller?
That's five movies, Sandra.
Oh, shit. Well, you know, Bueller is like, I used to use that in my class all the time.
Bueller?
Yeah, them kids was rolling. They were like, oh, my God, this freak is so weird. But, yeah, it would get a response, though. Anyway.
God knows I wish it did in the White House.
Yeah, but... I mean, do we call? Do we call the White House? Is there something we can do to buck him up? I mean, because, you know, I don't want to spend the rest of his administration tearing him down, but I have to say I'm really scared about what next year
will
look like.
If you'll pardon me for saying so, Sandra, I think that the incredibly dedicated and brave people who did Appalachia Rising back September 27th.
Right.
I think they're, you know, it's not the people who went to the John Stewart rally. It's the people who did Appalachia Rising. They are the ones who pointed the way forward. Because, again, I reiterate that that was not a lot of people who were disgusted with Barack Obama because they're Republicans or teabaggers or any of that stuff. These were rock-solid progressive people. These are people who believe, I mean, you know, the issue was mountaintop removal. But they believed, Sandra, I mean, I had conversations with them. I'm not speaking for the group. I would not presume to do that. But I know who they are. And they espoused things like universal single payer. And they hated the war in Iraq. And they hated the war in Afghanistan. And they hate the war that's being waged on them. And they went to the tune of a couple of thousand or more, and 115 of them who were progressive, who were liberal, sat down in front of the White House and got their asses arrested at their own hazard to send a message to Barack Obama that this is no longer tolerable. Maybe that is the way forward. Maybe it's time for us to get our liberal asses in front of the White House and sit the hell down and take a message to him.
Yeah, I do think that that has
you know,
to be...
if Robert Gibbs will let him close enough to the window to look out the curtain and peek at us.
Yeah, that has to be the way forward. I mean, you know, of course, a part of me is just, you know, fairly sympathetic because what he's surrounded by, I just don't, you know, I don't know. I mean, he seems to purge the administration of, you know, other brothers, I have to say. It's a real kind of, I don't know, I'm not too sure what's going on, where his, you know, close advisors are or people who talk frankly or unvarnished advice, as Bush would always say.
Oh, Jesus. No, I don't know what, and I think maybe that's where this conversation is pointing. I think what we perceive as his confusion stems from the bad advice that he is getting. I'm not letting him off the hook, because he hired these people. But he's getting bad advice. He's getting advice from people who, I don't know, is it because they're D.C. people? Is it because they're the kind of people who read David Broder, for Christ's sakes?
I guess I don't really understand, but see, there's no way in his right mind he can assume that extending the top-end taxes like that is going to benefit the economy at all. And we're talking about after the middle of this month, 2 million people with absolutely
nothing.
Zero income. Two million, for real. So I'd be more worried about that than I would be about these MFers getting a tax break. You see what I'm saying? It just don't compute.
I understand. And, you know, David in Tennessee noting, and he says, you know, Bob, the advice, it ain't that the advice is bad. The advice is tragic. I mean, and how do you come up with anything else, you know, from the Larry Summers stuff to the Robert Gibbs stuff to the Robert Gates stuff?
And then
you know, you get this sit down meeting that he had with the bloggers last week, and as we discussed, you know, he throws FDR under the bus. I go back to that famous Casey Stengel quote to the 1962 Mets. Does anybody here know how to play this game? Because I don't think anybody in the White House does.
Well, no, I mean, his best excuse was, oh, well, this happened to Reagan and Clinton, so. You know, and I remember he was going on about that, and I'm like, yeah, and your point being, I mean, what he should do now, since they told him what they want, he should come out and say, well, if you send me any legislation that's not part of my progressive agenda, I'm going to veto it. He could start from that place.
Yeah, he could, but that's the problem. He doesn't have a progressive agenda, Sandra. Because he's not progressive. He's not liberal. You know, he was asked in that blogger meeting, do you consider yourself a progressive? And it took him one of those five-paragraph George Orwell answers to say, kind of, sort of, maybe, but not really, and what's your next question?
Okay.
No, he
okay,
wants...
So there's no agenda. That's probably part of the problem with this whole past election, then, you know?
Well, there was certain... The only message that the Democrats had was, no, really, please, let us stay... You know, what kind of an agenda does a blue dog have?
No, listen, but they got what they deserved, and as the electorate would handle a situation like that. But what I'm quite amazed by is the sheer amount of seats that transferred here in one cycle. It's pretty incredible. And I think the distortion comes from this money, the Supreme Court decision, you know?
And that's the, you know, again, maybe that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Because there's no way we should have had that big of a, I'm sorry, I just thought that, you know, it's just really over the top. Anyway, listen, there is no resolution to this conversation, so.
Sandra, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Later. No resolution. And maybe that is an answer in and of itself. It's the fact that there aren't any resolutions that's providing the biggest part of our problems. What? I mean, I got the emails every day from all kinds of progressive political groups and Organizing for America and yada, 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 yada. And they wanted to talk about how dangerous it would be if the Republicans got into office, but they spent very little time talking about the good things that they had accomplished, even though there were some good things. They couldn't quite find their voice to describe them or talk about them because they were drowned out by their own screw-ups. Yeah, I couldn't... Look, outside of what ultimately happened to the House of Representatives, I couldn't be happier about what happened to the so-called blue dogs. It might, but it doesn't matter what happened or how happy or that I or you or we are if they don't understand why it happened to them. You know, this is another one of those analogies that I'm fond of using from time to time. But when a guy is sitting drunk in the tank after having been pulled over for DUI, one of two things happens. He or she says to him or herself, you know, I might not ought to drink and drive no more. The other thing that sometimes happens is that the real idiots will say, you know what? I got to keep a better eye out for the cops when I'm drinking and driving. There's something in me that thinks that the latter is what the Democrats are doing. Because I've read all this blame the liberals garbage, blame the left. A, what left? And B, if it's being too liberal, it's the problem. Why is it that 95% of the Congressional Progressive Caucus survived the election and 50% of the goddamn blue dogs didn't? But here we go, we're talking about the election again. Dadgummit. But we can do that. We can do that. Hey, welcome to the program.
You tell that Leroy that if he don't get his ass back down here, I'm going to come up there and cut it.
Leroy, I will take your message to Leroy.
Oh, my God. Do you remember that scene in that movie?
Oh, I remember yes. I love that. Who knew? You know, all this time, Jim, we thought that we were working with the metaphor of idiocracy, and it turns out we're working with being there. We've got President Chauncey Gardner.
Oh, well. I don't know. I think the common ground that they're suggesting is what I call quicksand.
Well, no, the common ground that that John Boehner and Eric Cantor and Mitch McConnell and that crowd have in mind, the common ground is that common ground where the person stands before they get before their body gets dumped in the grave. You know how the mob is fond of making you dig your own grave before they shoot you in it? That's the Republican Party. And we've got a Democratic Party that doesn't understand that they're playing with people who play for keeps. And they'll happily pull... I think we're on our seventh movie reference now. We're playing with people who will happily tell you, just like Abe Vigoda did in The Godfather, you know, tell Michael I'm sorry, it was only business. Tell Obama we're sorry, it was only business. But you know what?
Can you get me a break?
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand why these people don't understand the basic tenet of what I call self-preservation.
To wit?
Just exactly that, because, I mean, they don't seem to have any.
And they don't have a lot of ability to look at, well... There's psychological stuff. There are psychological dynamics at work, hard and hammer and tongs, hand over fist here, Jim. And you know, it was Plato who said that the unexamined life is not worth living. We've got a bunch of Democrats who can't see why it is that this was done to them.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they're the mindset of trying to make pie come out even, you know.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, and if we're going to establish a corollary, perhaps it's the unexamined party is not worth having.
A transcendental figure without resolution. I don't know. I don't think they do either, really.
You know, the common ground that Boehner and Mitch have in mind for Barack Obama is it becomes no ground at all when the trap door swings away, if you know what I mean.
Well, I said it's quicksand. That's exactly what common ground they want. I mean, that's the way I see it. I mean, that's just cutting the Gordian knot and just looking at the real solution they'd like to see, you know, achieved. Because he's on quicksand right now.
It's actually, and you know, again, Jim, I don't run around worrying about some 6'7" Arab with a portable dialysis machine in a cave in Pakistan. I just don't live my life that way. But this is scary. This is a presidency that's beginning to look very much like a ship that they are at the helm of a ship that has no rudder, and a rudderless ship is in a terrible fix in a stormy sea.
Either that or the Flying Dutchman. You know?
We are working our analogies tonight, aren't we?
Well, I mean, that ship was supposedly not able to achieve any type of port of call. And that's the way I kind of see things at the present time.
Well, after what you said on the show last night, I really wish you could have heard what Malloy said, because I think you would have been hollering hallelujah and amen from the rafters.
What did I say? I've forgotten now.
Oh, merely that you never had much regard for him, and that you had to hold your nose when you did vote for him, and that you're getting exactly what you expected from him.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, I'll say this again. I wanted Hillary Clinton, and I didn't want Barack Obama. I did not want a senator who had not even finished his term to become our chief executive. And what scared me the most was that John McCain were to be elected, guess who'd be the vice president, who would have been the president?
Because there's 2 years left in this term, and as the book says, not a day is guaranteed to any one of us. And we still could reach that passage where if it had been John McCain, we would be looking at the swearing in of President Palin. And yeah, that gives me the fantods.
Well, it gave me the fantods too. But I don't know. I really don't think that President Obama knows exactly what he's going to do. And the people who are advising him, the people whom he hired, have given him such advice. I just wonder if they're not in the pay of the Republican National Committee.
In a way, they are, because there's a lot of DLC types in his administration.
Well.
And they're in the pay of the same people that the Republican Party is in the pay of. That's why the DLC was created by Bill Clinton. He wanted to get some of that sweet money that the Republicans were getting.
Yep, that's what he did.
Now, to be fair, Jim, I don't think the situation would be that different with Hillary Clinton. I think it would be misogyny instead of racism, as Marty notes in an email.
I don't know. I have a great deal of respect for Mrs. Clinton. She took something very bad and turned it into something very good for herself. And she was smart enough and had enough savvy to stick by him, not divorce him, or in any way express her indignation. No, she stuck by him, and she got her own thing out of it. A lot of people really gained a lot of respect for her, including yours truly.
Well, I do remember when the campaign was taking off, and I made the observation that the Republican Party had 16 years to perfect its anti-Hillary machine, and that it would have been misery from day one. But you see, I think the lesson that comes out of that, Jim, is that this is what any Democratic president, if John Edwards had been the president, if Dennis Kucinich had been the president, this is how the Republicans would have reacted, because this is how the Republicans react. And it's whatever, if there's this culture inside the Democratic Party that is essentially terrified to the point of having its bowels run water, then it doesn't make a difference who is in the White House.
Well,
because we will always politic from a position, an inferior position of fear.
Well, the Republican Party plays from a position of taking no prisoners. And it's like the email I sent you quoting from The Art of War by Sun Tzu. You know?
Yeah.
And like I said last night.
Well, yeah, it's another case where the Republican Party's reading Sun Tzu and we're reading Charlie Chan.
Well, I think exactly right. I mean, you know, they need to read that book, and they need to realize exactly how to engage in an opponent and to defeat him. And they need to adopt the take no prisoners attitude. Of course, they've gotten themselves whittled down to the point that I don't even think their positions can be reversed. I mean, I really don't see how much, you know, they can be.
You know, Ron just wrote in from Raleigh, Jim, and he said, if you look up compromise in the Repiglican Dictionary, the definition is complete, total, and absolute capitulation. And that is how they view a compromise.
You know, compromise was something Obama was quite familiar with when he was a senator involved in Illinois politics. State politics and federal politics are entirely different. And I think that's one of Obama's problems. He's been kind of playing like in Washington, what he tried to do and make that work, or how it worked for him in Illinois. It doesn't work that way. I just think the man is completely out of his depth. And I'm sorry he is the president, and I wish we could have had Mrs. Clinton. Because I think she would have had enough savvy to have perhaps taken a different course. That's just my own opinion.
Yeah, I understand. I think she might have handled it differently, but I think the essential degree of opposition would have remained the same.
Well, of course it would, but I mean, I'm not talking about the degree of opposition. I'm talking about the person who's opposing it.
You know,
I'm talking about generalship. I'm talking about strategy. I'm talking about tactics. I'm talking about ways to, you know, give them back what they gave you. And if anybody's had a lesson in that, it's Hillary Clinton, let me tell you. If anybody's had to claw her way to the top, she has.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, based on what I read coming from Ron and Raleigh, there's also this. Today on his program, that street drug synthetic heroin junkie, Rush Limbaugh, said something to the effect, Jim, of, the Republicans should no more compromise now than the Allies did with the Axis after World War II. A, he called us Nazis. B, he considers us a beaten foe who is to be subjected and told what to do and how to behave. And the sad thing is, Jim, even though they've only got one house of the Congress, that's going to wind up being what happens.
Well, as far as Rush Limbaugh is concerned, the man is just more, as far as I'm concerned, an idiot. And it wouldn't take any effort at all to just cut him right down to his shoes. Hell, I could do it.
But he never gets into a place where he can be, because his followers, Jim, attach a level of devotion to him that is seldom seen outside of religious circles.
Rush Limbaugh? Yeah, I guess you're right. There's some people who are that damn woodenly stupid and stupidly wooden.
Hear, hear.
I mean, some of the stuff he says on the air, and I just don't listen to him.
Well, you're lucky. It's not broadcast in Beckley anymore.
Well, I never would listen to him when he was in Beckley, but I used to listen to him back when, older times when he was first getting off the ground, and, you know, he would try to interject these comedic insertions about people like Ted Kennedy and this, that, and the other, and, you know, hey, that sword cuts both ways. And if anybody had any cojones, they could take that very sword that he uses and cut him down with it. And the same goes for Glenn Beck, and the same goes for O'Reilly, and people like that. Trouble is, we just don't have the platform and the money supporting us that they do, and the slavish devotion of some of the people who listen to their programs and who accept every word that these idiots speak as gospel. When it really doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize, they're just full of it. And they're full of themselves, and they're filled with mistruths, half-truths, which, in my opinion, are much worse than blackball lie. You know, I have much more respect for a liar than I do somebody who speaks in half-truths. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I do. And, you know, the thing is, Jim, it's not like the White House doesn't have the opportunity to know what they're facing. Here's another one of those moments. Mike Pence from Indiana, and this guy is... I mean, he's madder than a hatter and crazier than a bedbug. He's one of these hardcore, you know, fetus protecting right wingers, that kind of stuff. He went on the radio today, somewhere in Indiana. And, you know, he put it out there for all and sundry to hear. He said, I'm going to ensure that Republicans come out of the gate and seize this moment. We've really been given a second chance at a first impression, and I'm going to tell them that we have to rise to the challenge with principle and conviction, and not, this is the important part, and not with this attitude that you saw coming from the White House yesterday and from some other quarters on the establishment left in Washington, which was that somehow the message of the election was that they want Democrats and Republicans to work better together to get along. Good heavens. They've got their ball bats and their meat axes, and they are coming for the Obama White House, and the Obama White House has got its tambourines and guitars and candles out.
Well, you know, Bob, so did Joe McCarthy and Roy Cohn, and they had their brief gaudy hour. And finally, one day, during the Army hearings, Joseph Welch just looked at McCarthy and said, have you no sense of decency, sir? Have you at long last not been able to achieve any modicum of self-respect and decency? And that's what it would take.
And we ain't got one.
Well.
Do we?
Oh, yeah, there's somebody out there somewhere, I'm sure. I haven't lost total faith yet.
Because the one difference then and now is the nature of media.
Well, Bob, I've said this before, and I'm going to get off here. As Goethe once said, one must either the anvil or the hammer be. And I can tell you which one will last the longest, and that's the anvil and not the hammer.
But
we'll
it's,
wait and see.
But it's tough taking that beating, Jim.
Well.
And that's what anvils get. But I understand what you're saying. Jim, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You too.
Bye now. That's our buddy Jim. What kind of excuse could there possibly be for the Obama administration simply to not understand the nature of the, and I'm going to use the word, I won't apologize for it like Obama did. What is it about the Obama administration that they don't understand the nature of the enemy that they face? I said it last night and I'll say it again. The Republicans are enemies. Because their whole goal is to tear down everything that is this country. Everything. Baby, everything is on the table. Medicare is on the block. Medicaid is on the block. The VA is on the block. Social Security is on the block. Unemployment compensation is on the block. If it does not include a direct benefit that inures to the ruling class in this country, it is on the block with these thugs. Because that's how thugs operate. And the only way you ever stop a thug, whether he's wearing brown shirts or down-at-heel boots, is to directly oppose them. You cannot beat a thug with nuance, for the love of Christ. You can't. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Gareth out in Bucks County.
Hey, Gareth. How are you?
Long time no talk.
It has been.
Yeah. I like the being there analogy. I just heard that. With Obama?
Yes.
And now you've got me waiting for a speech from him that goes something like, first you have spring, then summer.
Yeah, there will be growth fall, in the spring.
And now we're in Republican winter. You know, something like that. You know, I know where you're going with that. It's, because... Yeah, he basically just said, I'm going to invite the GOP to the White House now for a little talk.
Yeah, a little cake, a little ices, you know.
You know, and
a little shilly-shally.
And he's already talking about compromising on the taxes, on the Bush breaks.
Yeah.
So I'm not too sure. I guess.
And what do we do when he surrenders, when he gives in on that? What do we do, Gareth? What do we do? Not yelling at you, but I mean, I'm perplexed. I don't know.
I hear you. I hear it. But you see, look, I figured out, I know why these Becks, the Glenn Becks, the O'Reillys are popular to millions of people now. I finally figured out the analogy. They're popular to millions of people for the same reason that McDonald's is popular to millions of people. It tastes good. It's quick and easy going down. But the people who eat that crap never worry about the long-term effects. Okay? It's the same thing. It sounds great to say extend tax breaks. Who the hell is going to pay off this $11 trillion of debt I'm handing over to my daughter, you know? I don't understand what these people play some bizarre financial game that doesn't even have anything to do with reality.
They're utterly divorced from it, Gareth. They are.
They are. I mean, I was doing the math recently. Do you realize this debt we have now? The interest alone is something like $500 billion a year in interest?
Yeah, but and the thing is, I understand the debt issue, and God knows the teabaggers hollered about debt till they were blue in their pasty little white faces, but not one of them, and I know you do, and I do, and the Horn family does, not one of them understood who created that debt.
That's the scary part. They don't. They seem to have forgotten what's happened. And
see, even that is rooted in racism, because it's rooted in the old hateful white myth of the shiftless Negro.
Right, right. Your theory about this election being heavily race-based is starting to resonate with a lot of other people. I didn't even think about it that much. I really was hoping the whole idea of people's skin color was irrelevant at this point. But
They hate him. They would hate, now to sort of piggyback with what I was saying with Jim a minute ago, Gareth, they would hate Hillary Clinton too. They would hate her for having a vagina.
Oh, right, right. That's fine. Yeah, she's not white, male, southern. Right.
Right.
I know you're coming from there.
But it's a space. It. The racist, the inherent deep flowing racism current that runs through this country is miles wide and fathoms deep.
But doesn't it? It's like the it's just like the whole obsession with gay marriage and all this other stuff. You know, I look around and I'm amazed what these people are obsessed with, because look, the environment is being destroyed. There's wars, a couple wars going on. We're wiping out the oceans. You know, we're screwing each other up. I mean, the financial system's ruined. And there's people who are actually concerned about who's sleeping with who. Does that make any sense to you? Why is that even on the radar?
Because
I don't get it. I just don't. Because they still go on about that, my Republican friends.
Let me see if I can get at this. You say, why is it on the radar? It's on the radar, Gareth, because it was deliberately put on the radar. The focus on the family and the American Family Association and the Christian Council of whatever spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in Iowa alone to defeat three Supreme Court justices who said that gay people should have the same constitutional rights as straight people. It is on the radar because it was placed upon the radar. These are wedge issues. These are the issues upon which the Republican Party thrives, because it brings out the absolute worst in the electorate.
And it does. And I was just talking to an old Republican friend during this whole fiasco the last couple of days, and they're not even aware of other news, it seems to me. Like I mentioned, do you know what the Federal Reserve did yesterday? And they go, huh? We had another round of quantitative easing, which is fancy government speak for printing lots and lots of money. That's we printed up another $600 billion, Bob.
Yeah, but the thing is,
Treasury bills, and these guys aren't even aware of it.
We keep printing, but we print it and we give it to the Wall Street banksters, and they sit on it some more.
Yeah,
I mean the notion of quantitative easing, as I understand it, only works if the money freaking circulates.
That's exactly, yeah, and the whole idea, and hopefully bring down long-term interest rates and all that stuff. But
but we don't even have an interest rate issue anymore. I think Sandra is correct when she says that the Fed is just sort of casting about.
Right. Do you think it's served its purpose at this point, the Federal Reserve?
I think it's outlived its usefulness, frankly.
I'm beginning to wonder myself. You know, when you look at what's all this printing, you know, they keep ordering all this ink and paper, and I can't.
But every, you know, every law of systems dynamics says that sooner or later a system will reach the end of its efficacy, and I think, you know, I think that's probably, you're probably seeing some of that with the Federal Reserve and frankly global currencies as well, to the extent that they're all fiat currencies. If you don't have something of real value underpinning money, then sooner or later you're going to reach a point where you've got to call the note.
Right. I don't.
And God help us if China calls the note.
I don't think it's in their interest to do that, and I don't think we're going to go back to a gold standard. But at the same time, I don't see the dollar being the reserve currency much longer. You know, and I'll bring this up. Going back to my Republican friends, and they don't even seem to care. They're more concerned about the color of the guy's skin and who's sleeping with who. You can bring up this stuff, and it's complex mathematics.
Right, because it's easy. It's easy. Those, you know, who's sleeping with who and the poor little fetuses are easy for unintelligent people to get what exists of their tiny minds around it. I gotta go out and vote, because if I don't, the liberals will eat the babies. See, that's easy. And that's why abortion is still legal. Abortion isn't still legal in the United States because of anything Democrats did. Democrats can't do anything. We're weak. We're pusillanimous. We're pathetic. Okay? Abortion is still legal in the United States because the Republican Party wants it to remain legal in the United States, because it's the only way that they can bumper jack their mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, the room-temperature IQ'd voting base out to the polls. They're that, I mean, I guess I sound like an elitist, but they're that daggum dumb.
I wonder how many of those folks came out to knock down the marijuana use out in California, you know?
Well, I think that's a slightly more complex case, simply because no candidates would come out in favor of it. And in fact, I think there was a lot of money that went into the no campaign from the people who are growing it now, who didn't want their economy adjusted.
They like their underground.
Well, sure. I mean, I by way of explanation, I've told this before, Gareth, but I grew up in a county that is something called dry. There are dry counties all over the South. And the kind of dry county I grew up in, like, for instance, a dry county in West Virginia means you can only buy beer and wine in the county. You can't buy liquor. A dry county in the deep South means you can't buy anything in a bigger bottle than vanilla extract. Okay? You can't buy beer. You can't buy wine. You can't buy... So every now and then, a few progressive souls in my county would get together a referendum to let the county go wet. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And every time that happened, a little committee would spring up called the Citizens for Decency and Morality. The organizational structure would come from the churches, and the operational money would come from the bootleggers.
Right, right, right. That's interesting. Oh, by the way, a quick book recommendation. The Big Con, Jonathan Chait. Jonathan, Chait, last name.
I've read his name in a couple of different places lately, and
good
I think
book.
Yeah, I think that's something I ought to get my hands on.
It's all about the K Street stuff. It's also about how these guys absolutely refuse to give up their supply-side religion. They just won't give it up, despite being disproven time.
And you are so correct in calling it their religion, because it is.
It's one of the best books on this subject. It's pretty clear, and... It's really well written. It goes all the way back to the Laffer curve and how Reagan was seduced by that, and even mentions that fascinating scene from Michael Moore's film Capitalism: A Love Story. Did you
yes,
see that?
Yes.
I'll never forget that scene at the very beginning when Reagan's making a speech on Wall Street. I think just after his inauguration, and he gets nudged by a guy in a suit, and he's saying, "Speed it up."
Yeah, hurry up, buddy.
Yeah, and it turned out to be the Merrill Lynch.
Jesus. Well, it's, you know, I'm seeing stuff here coming in from people listening to the conversations we're having this evening. And one of them, Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist, just wrote in, and he said, you know, Bob, I hate to say it, but I hope the Republicans are successful in cutting the budgets for all social programs. I hope they gut the budget for welfare, unemployment, and the VA. I hope they're successful in ending banking regulation, and I hope they succeed in outsourcing more jobs. I want all these cuts to be riders on the budget and defense spending. That way, in 2012, when hundreds of thousands of voters are out of work and have no medical or unemployment checks, all the Dems will have to say is, we had to support our troops. The Republicans put our soldiers at risk to push their agenda. And I understand that thinking. I understand it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing is, though, I don't think the Republicans are that ham-fisted. The Republicans, Gareth, they're not the kind of people who come at you with they don't come at you with the ball bat and just beat you to a pulp, you know, until you're laying there breathing your last. The Republican Party are stranglers. And what they will do, as we have seen them do every time a social program of any merit has come into existence in this country, what the Republicans do is they begin to slowly strangle it to death. Anything that's been any good for this country that was introduced by Democrats, they have begun to strangle to death. You got the National Labor Relations Act under FDR. Well, in short order, the Republicans came along and created Taft-Hartley to make sure that no real labor movement would develop. The same thing happened with Social Security. The same thing happened with Medicare. The Republicans keep insisting on raiding it and try, because what they ultimately want to do, they want to make it so it's the old Grover Norquist thing where they want to make something so weak that it can be drowned in a bathtub. And what they do is they make it so weak as to make it ineffectual, and then they say, well, see how ineffectual it is? It doesn't work. Why are we still doing this? So rather than kill it outright, they let it die a slow, painful death so that people will then look up and say, well, hell, why have we still got it? And you know what? You're hearing people say that about Social Security right now. You know, well, I ain't never going to see it. I reckon I'd be just as well off to keep that money in my paycheck. At least I could buy me a new TV.
Well, that's a very good summation of what they're all about. And I got to go here, but I just wanted to mention, as an independent who voted for Obama, I have to say that when I did vote for him, I got the strange sense that the iceberg had already hit the Titanic and we just got a new captain, and there really maybe there's not much he could really do. You know, that's my honest feeling when I voted 2 years ago. Because we're talking, the mathematics of this financial thing are mind-boggling. They really are. And I don't know how long it's going to take, Bob. I really don't. It could be 10% unemployment forever, you know. Indefinitely.
Well, and that's the thing, I don't want to keep you any longer, but, Gareth, the thing is, I don't know if there's any getting well. And I take no pride in saying that. But if you have a sense of history, you know that empires don't stop being empires and go back to being something else without a whole lot of anguish.
That's very true, and the analogies are pretty scary. The Roman Empire, I mean, they had the shrinking middle class tax base in their provincial governments. They had the massive corruption internally. They had the overextended military. I mean, the similarities are scary, and that's why I'm getting worried. As you know, Bob, I'm learning to farm next door. So.
Yes. Frankly, I think that's one of the better things you could be doing. Gareth, it's awfully good hearing from you, and don't be a stranger.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye now. Email just came in from our buddy William. He says, the main reason I didn't vote for Obama was his insistence on ramping up Afghanistan and calling it the good war. Didn't vote for McCain either, so one could say I voted my conscience. I do feel many voters cast a vote for Obama because of the 8 long years of GW, and voters were not really offered another choice. The choice always seems to be made for us. That's the way they work. That's the way a carnival games work. You think you're making a choice, but you're not. There was very little known about Obama, and when I asked on liberal forums, I was told to read his 2 books. Well, hell, that's not quite enough. To further add, why is it the Obamas seem to feel they can take so many vacations at a time when so many are hurting? This does not project that he is for the people's interest in my mind. Obama just a few days ago admitted being president is difficult. Well, then do the job. Show up. And because while you're away, others are working against you, says William. You know, I remember George W. Bush was vacation boy. And the fact that, you know, I don't know. It's a miserable job. You know, look, I sit here behind this microphone and do 3 hours a night, and after a couple of weeks, I need an extra day. So I'm not going to begrudge anybody a vacation because I want everybody in America to have 6 weeks paid vacation a year. I'm just that weird. But I understand the sentiment behind that. But we're talking about an American electorate that doesn't know beans when the bag's open, as my mother used to say. Consider, David Vitter was up for re-election in Louisiana. David Vitter was up for this is a man who has confessed to going to sex professionals, and he's a family values Republican at the same time. And apparently ask any sex pro in Louisiana, and they'll tell you about David Vitter's diaper fetish. And you know what? As long as nobody's getting hurt, no big deal. Unless you're out there talking about your family values Christianity. And then it becomes a big deal, but it becomes a big deal because you're a hypocrite. But I guess, you know what, it's Louisiana and you know, laissez le bon temps brûler, and so what if he likes to wear a diaper and who knows. Then there's John Ensign coming up for re-election in a couple of years or 4 years or whatever in Nevada. Now, this guy's parents paid off the husband of his mistress, who also worked on his staff or some such, if I recall correctly, all the while John Ensign was a member of C Street. And it doesn't matter. Because, you know what? He's not perfect. He's just forgiven. Meanwhile, if indeed we did switch captains after the Titanic hit the iceberg, you know what? I got to say, a lot. Bless his heart, Barack Obama has got him some feng shui down pat, because I have never seen better rearranged deck chairs. Ron in Raleigh says, oh, heck yeah, Bob. Let's extend those Bush tax cuts for another 10 years so they won't produce any jobs for another 10 years. As Count Dicula, still sounds like a bad porn movie, says, Ronald Reagan proved that deficits don't matter. Did he? I mean, I know Count Dicula said that, but did Reagan prove it? Or did he prove that you can steal from the American people as long as you tell them that you're doing it because you love Merca? See? Yeah. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. And thanks for taking my call, Bob.
Roberto.
I guess I wanted to weigh in on this. Although you've all covered it quite nicely. I was just thinking about this incredible confusion that they continue to perpetrate on the ignorant electorate, and how they were so successful at taking back our country from those progressive socialist monsters.
Islamofascists, don't forget.
Let's go over how progressive and socialist he's been. Okay, I'm done.
Yep. The view from the airship Silver Pelican with Reverbo.
I mean, well, let's see. How progressive was Larry Summers and Timmy Geithner? How progressive was, not really putting any weight really behind Medicare for All? This guy isn't a progressive. He's not. He's in many ways, like you say, this guy's been bent over backwards for big business. As usual.
Yeah, and yet I saw an article at CNN.com headlined, Obama to Business, I Want a Do-Over. What?
Oh, it doesn't, yeah, what? It doesn't work on you or me. I guess it works on people who you can go up to them and say, well, if you vote for us, and Wall Street will steal more money from your grandkids.
It is as if Wall Street has said, you gave us almost everything. We told you we want everything.
And they go, huh, sounds good to me. When can we sign? But there's just so much weird confusion here. It's almost like it really is a Twilight Zone episode. I can't. You remember, I think a few months ago, The Nation, somebody was writing in The Nation magazine, I may have even emailed you this, it was something about why a progressive agenda or a progressive administration is almost impossible. Do you remember that article?
Yes.
I think it was in The Nation. And they basically were saying, let me think how this went. Well, okay, the Democratic Party is just hopelessly fragmented and idealistic. Continues to be, and you add that to the fact that our democratic structure is just completely distorted by money now. I mean, just to an unbelievable degree, and that those who have paid to be in power and have access, the plutocrats have no. I mean, they're going to hang on to that, to the system. They don't have any. They don't want to give it up. They ain't giving it up. So it's been sabotaged is the key. It's sabotaged to such an extent that reform is almost impossible.
And isn't the final act in that set piece Citizens United, Reverbo?
Oh, it is. They basically legitimized our highest component in the democratic process is now the dollar bill. That's great. Now, let's not forget.
And that may be what creates what Karl Rove was referring to not so many long years back as the permanent Republican majority. See, we all laughed about that when we took the Congress back. Oh, look at Karl Rove's permanent Republican majority. Ho, ho, ho. What a jackass he is. Ho, ho, ho. How's it feel, Karl? And while we were laughing, Karl was working. Because Karl is one of Karl's that guy who got beat to the who got beat up every day on the playground because he was such a hopeless nerd. And he is getting back at everybody with the rest of his life. And we're paying for it.
But the system works. Here's a crazy thought. Okay, 100% of the Republicans are just hopeless. They're just hopeless vampires. They're totally useless to any progressive ideas, any progressive agenda. Unfortunately, about 25 or 30% of the Democrats, you would agree, are also will also sell us down the river, right?
Sure.
So that don't leave much. I think it's when everybody's talking about time to roll up our sleeves and, you know, get tough, maybe it just means like, well, then let's just join the party. I mean, the time for idealism and rational, logical thought is long over. Let's just play it like they play it then. I mean, I don't know exactly what to do, you know, at this point is what I'm saying. You've got all these people just sort of hanging out there. You remember how easy it was to be idealistic when, you know, you're spending your mom and dad's money for lunch? Yeah, and then you kind of, after college, you kind of realize what things really cost and what your priorities really are and what it takes to live. And I'm not saying everyone changes and becomes a right-wing nut.
No, but to use an analogy, you go from thinking, hey, you know what? I'll go ahead and buy that 20-year-old bottle, and then it turns into your money that you're spending, and you know what? I think I'll buy beer. I think I'll buy PBR.
Well, and you just become wiser, and you get an idea of what it's like to be a part of your community, right? You get an idea of what everybody's going through. You get this larger picture of things the older you get. Of course, our friends on the other side, their picture seems to have gotten smaller.
Well, yes, it shrinks by definition because the way they want it is that there are less people in that picture. They don't want to be in one of those big old crowd pictures where you can't see who's in there. They want it just very few people. That'll be very nice, and we'll know exactly who we are. And that way, we'll know who the Christmas list and the dinner party invitation list almost writes itself.
Yeah, I was the funny. The scene I like is all those tea party, all these people busily writing invitations for their conservative pimps, not ever realizing that their name is not on the invitation list.
Well, I don't know if you realize this, but there are a couple of cracks showing already, Reverbo, because the Republican Party, the official Republican Party, has more or less officially blamed the teabaggers for the fact that the Republicans don't have the Senate.
Really? But that's just more craziness. The teabaggers are a total construction of the Republican Party, are they not?
Yeah, it's. But that's a, that.
How do you?
It's not an accident that a woman who ran World Wrestling Entertainment ran for office this year. Okay, let's put it that way, because they've got to establish. And there's been a lot of it going back and forth. You know, well, you know, just because the Republicans won doesn't mean that they've got the Tea Party support. They got to say that kind of stuff because it's wrestling.
I guess. It just reminds me of how they recruited all the religious fundamentalists, say, years ago, but they really just exploited them. They thought they were being recruited, but they were laughing at them behind their backs. Didn't matter. They were very useful at the time. But, I don't know. I just don't. Yes, the structure's polluted. Yeah, everything's distorted. Yeah, it's impossible. It's a PR nightmare, right? How are you going to sell public spending The Republicans, people say, oh, the Democrats have a horrible messaging. They don't know how to get out the message on anything. But just think about this. How do you even sell this? Because it's just so sabotaged.
Well, you wrap it in a flag.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. You do it, then we'll all become Republicans. Maybe that's us. Just get on that. Maybe that bus is leaving, and we didn't buy it.
Well, I had an email earlier from Randall who said, stop voting out of fear. That's what Republican voters do. Just go and register for the Green Party and send a message to the Democrats. He says, I voted a straight Democratic ticket because there were no Green Party candidates on the ballot. And I understand that, but let's all go register Republican and just wreck the party.
It's what they would do.
It's what they've already done. Where do you think the Blue Dogs came from?
Let's spread the blame out over the country here for a second, though, too. There's a whole other aspect of it, because it's very easy to elect Democrats. Just do the math. There's more Democratic there are more voters registered Democratic than are registered Republican.
Absolutely.
And I believe there are still more people who identify with Democrats.
But you've got to get them to give enough of a damn to come out and vote. I didn't see. What was the final vote tally, Reverbo, for the number of people who voted this time through?
I didn't see.
Because whatever the number of registered voters is, that's usually about half of those eligible. By the time you do the homework, or by the time you do the math, and you realize exactly how much of a percentage of the eligible voters of America just chose America's government, you really can't look at it as any sort of a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sandra had that statistic. She corrected herself earlier today. She said that based on something she had written me last night that I'd read on air, she corrected herself and said, no, with the demise of Acorn, voter registration was down 30% this year.
Yeah.
Well, who was Acorn registering? Yeah.
Well, I don't. You know, they can't win on their. You gotta. One of our two political parties, they don't have the numbers, and they can't win with their truth. They can't win with their real message. Vote for us, and you'll go broke. So they have to do what they do. They just exploit and recruit and manipulate idiots. And again, I don't know. It is amazing when you think about it how they did this. Because let's leave Obama out of this even for a minute. Because we all thought he was some sort of enough of us thought he was some sort of progressive. I guess I agree. The Obama presidency basically was because Bush was so awful. Hillary Clinton would have been a fine president, or she wouldn't have been any worse than Obama. And she would have been, I believe she would have been the president if she was the nominee, don't you?
Oh, yeah, she would have beaten McCain.
Oh, yeah, those two in nitwits. There's no, Daffy Duck would have beaten those two.
But you have to, Reverbo, wait just a minute. You have to go back for a second. And I'm sorry, I'm taking away from you away from your previous line. But go back to my thesis about the 2008 election. I maintained that the Republican Party did not want the presidency in 2008. They didn't want it. Because George W. Bush had done such a fine job just blindly, drunkenly wrecking everything that he set his hand to, that they knew that if they handed the presidency off to another Republican, that the Republican brand really would be dead. Because Republican politics can't fix Republican problems. They didn't want the presidency, Reverbo. That's why they set up Grumpy John and Caribou Barbie. I don't know if those two know to this day that they were used, that they were chumps. But they were. You know, the Republican Party went through all the same motions that they went through when they ran Bob Dole, for the love of God. They knew they couldn't win with Bob Dole. Bob Dole wants to be president because Bob Dole's really mean.
Bob Dole wasn't such a bad guy, was he?
Oh, yes, he was. He was a hateful ass. But the thing is, in the grand scheme of things, he looks like an okay guy now, because basically that's his, the health care bill that we've got now that turned out to be socialism and communism and fascism and everything, all atheism all rolled into one, a Reverbo. That's the health care bill that he submitted in 1994. That's the Bob Dole health care bill. Bob Dole wants you to have corporate health care.
Good grief.
But, yeah, it was a dummy job. No
one would have voted for those two, and no one did. Yeah, I guess none of this happens by accident. So yes, that was the plan. Give it up in 2008, regroup. Well, they literally pulled it back from the grave, I guess. And they're just masters at this. They spent the last two years, somehow or other, they deconstructed everything that happened and convinced enough idiots that the Democrats caused all this mess.
This plan was in from a long way back, Reverbo. I'd say by the time George Bush sort of won his second term, they knew what they were going to do when he left office, because they knew what was being done. Burglars know that they're steal. Burglars know when you're out of the when they've got all the silver, don't they?
Aren't you giving George Jr. a little bit too much credit here, though?
No, I'm not giving George any credit. I'm giving the people behind George. George was never anything. George was a thing.
He didn't have an original thought in his head.
You know, he's out there put out a book now in which he's making the prosecution's case for them. He's not bright.
Yeah, I would love to see that. That'd be something Lyndon Johnson would have already had done. Have a little meeting in the basement of the White House and pretty much rip them a new one.
George W. Bush was a jug-eared, pig-eyed hood ornament on Count Dicula's Cryptmobile.
God, a Cryptmobile. I have to give you a bell.
Well, bless your heart. I'm scoring big tonight. But no, I want to be really, really clear about this, Reverbo. I don't want anybody to have any misgivings. No, it was a boat race. The fix was in. The horse that the Republicans ran in 2008 was lame in two legs.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Because see, if you work out the plans, and you know that by the time George is done being president, that the country is going to be in the toilet, and they knew. Then all you got to do, if you're an evil genius like Karl Rove, is you say, boys, here's what we're going to do. We're either going to let the brown one or the woman have the job, whichever one they decide is going to run. And it'll be the same story either way. That damned communist is destroying our economy. And boys, the American people will bite it lock, stock, and barrel, because we've got enough racists in this country and we've got enough misogynists in this country that'll resonate with them. If we'd only had a good, upstanding, God-fearing white man in there like John McCain, this would all be better. And we wind up looking nostalgic, and we'll be back in control in 2 years. Mark my words, boys!
All you have to do to stop them is to get out and vote. It's a no-brainer. It's so easy to stop them. There aren't enough of them. And they didn't do it. I can't wait for 2012. This is just going to be fascinating. You think it's going to be Jeb, huh?
Oh, I'm more than willing to be wrong, but I'm convinced. Who else could it be?
I don't know.
Willard Romney? Will America ever elect President Paul Lenti? A guy who sounds like the name of Italian grits? Willard? Tim?
Bill Clinton came out of nowhere. Someone could come out of nowhere.
Bill Clinton really didn't come out of nowhere, though. We groomed him. See, just like when John Kerry accepted the nomination in 2004... They had this young black dude named Barack Obama give the speech where he talked about, I see an America that's not red or blue, I see an America that's purple, and we all just wet ourselves over him. The same thing happened in reverse in 1988 when a young, hotshot Arkansas governor named Bill Clinton gave a speech that Fidel Castro would have thought was too long. It was a horrible speech. It was a terrible speech. And I remember because I was there when he finally got to the point where he said, and in conclusion, the entire hall erupted in applause just for saying in conclusion. But it was clear that he was the fair-haired boy. And he had been anointed. He didn't really come out of nowhere. And that's the other thing. Even if he did, that's the way Democrats operate. It is not how Republicans operate, Reverbo. Remember, we're talking about an incredibly disciplined, highly structured organization. And frankly, if I was Jeb Bush, I'd be doing exactly what Jeb Bush is doing. Laying low.
I was going to say laying low. Well, plus they, of course, have a trillion-dollar media conglomerate, media machine. They got the largest megaphone ever invented.
I don't know if you saw that clip where Jon Stewart congratulated Chris Wallace on winning the election. It was cute.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he said, wait a minute, I'm talking about Fox News. And Stewart just, oh, what, huh? What, you mean there's a difference between, oh, dear.
Hey, I'm too busy watching. You know what I do in my spare time? I'm too busy watching the Andy Griffith Show on DVD, the Barney years.
Yeah, because I can't stand Mayberry RFD. It's just
that's what I do. That's how I become evolved with that. I don't know. This is pretty disappointing. I mean, the youth vote was totally disappeared. That's just the thing. No one voted. That's how you do it. If you vote, Democrats win. You don't vote, Republicans win. I mean, it's really simple.
Yeah.
But so what? So Democrats win. I mean, what does that mean?
Well, we've got 2 years worth of what does that mean? And that's not me. I know the Obama administration gets real bent, Reverbo, over all of us professional lefties. Saying that they haven't done anything when they can point to health care and credit card reform and the Lilly Ledbetter Act and they tried to do stuff. You know, oddly enough, we lost the House of Congress that was actually trying to accomplish something. We lost the House of Representatives. Most of my gripe is not with the House of Representatives.
Oh, you're right about that. It's the Senate that's just obstructionist.
The Senate, the Senate is mortmain. The Senate is a dead hand.
Yep, a bunch of dysfunctional aristocrats. That's who they are.
You know, eventually, if I'm not mistaken on my history, the UK got around to more or less neutering the House of Lords. Well, we haven't gotten there with the Senate yet, but God knows it needs it.
What is this going to do? So, I don't know. People say, this was expected. This historically, the midterms always, the party in power always loses.
Sure.
These elections and da-da-da-da-da. And I was wondering, however, what this might mean to, I don't know, an outfit like the Horn and people who are really hoping to, you know, start up, attract, you know, well, let's just get to it. Attract funds and money to keep things going and to grow and to, you know.
Well, I was thinking about exactly that, Reverbo, because come January, you know, these conferences always happen during the best weather in Washington, D.C. Come January, I will be at one of those conferences up there, and we'll broadcast live and do lots of interviews and stuff like that. But I will be very interested. I'll be very interested to see what the tone of that conference is, because it is hosted by a group and attended by groups that are decidedly progressive, decidedly liberal. You know, people who believed in public options and beyond that actively worked for universal single payer. things like that. And I will be curious to see whether or not the attitude is one in which they are subdued or one in which they are militantly angry. I will think that there is hope if they're militantly angry.
Yeah. Did I hear that Soros had some quote? I don't know if this is just hearsay or what, that he didn't really get involved in this time around or not.
Yeah, Soros said he sat this one out. He and his money sat this one out.
Yeah, he said, "Figured it's just a done deal, so don't waste your time." I don't know what my comment is on that. None of it is a waste of time.
No, but I really would. I would like to. This suggestion was made on the program a couple of nights ago, Reverbo. I would like to see, and I'm not just talking about somebody, funding us. I would like to see George Soros take some of that money. You know, my God, they're going to vilify him. If George Soros buys toilet paper, there's a right-wing blog, a right-wing broadcaster, a right-wing PR firm out there that's ready to spin the story that George Soros is buying toilet paper in order to destroy America and make us a communist nation. So it's the same lesson we're trying to get across to Obama. They're going to do this anyway because it's what they do.
Yeah.
So why not do your damnedest? Take some of that money and dump it into putting together a really, really honest to Jesus liberal media structure and show the world what liberal media looks like.
Yeah, be the next Murdoch, Chief.
Yeah, because the thing is, that is the Murdoch model. Damn the costs. We are changing a culture. And it works. But the thing is, the liberals actually worry about their money.
Well, then it goes back to what I was thinking before. Let's just, obviously, we're not playing the game in town. We're sitting in on the wrong game. No one's coming to our game. We're hopelessly idealistic and rational. I mean, Feingold, he claimed that he doesn't take any corporate money. He doesn't take any money. I don't know how he finances his campaign. Where does he get his money? And he got clobbered. They just thought, God, you're just going to be easy to take you out. We'll just dump $4 million, $5 million into your... against you and your history. And, at some point you just have to think, this isn't working.
No. But to use a sporting analogy, with these mugwump Democrats, it's like being a receiver in football and being sent on a crossing pattern over the middle. You know you're going to get the snot knocked out of you, so you might as well catch the ball anyway and do some good.
There you go. I mean, when you're up against people who got where they got by stomping on as many of us as possible, what makes them think that they're going to quit? They're gonna come to their senses and they're gonna start being cooperative.
You know, I think that's ultimately the question. The question that this evening's installment has morphed into: what do we have to do to get it through to the elected Democrats and the mainstream power brokers? You know what? The Republican Party got the shit scared out of them by the town halls and the teabaggers and stuff. They really did, because they realized that they had created a monster that they could not fully control. And they went to town hall meetings, and they screamed at everybody. The teabaggers didn't just go to the town hall meetings and scream at the Democrats. They screamed at the Republicans, too. But you know what? We haven't worked up... We need that movement among liberals and progressives. We need to start screaming at people. Not from disrespect, but from the standpoint of, we're having an intervention here, and you've got a problem, and you've got to acknowledge you've got a problem. The Blue Dogs wouldn't acknowledge that they had a problem, and now half of the Blue Dogs are gone. We got 2 years. or at least a year, for corporate America to sit there, and don't think for a minute, Reverbo, that they're not going to be out there banging on corporate doors saying, give till it hurts, baby, give till it hurts. We are that close, we're going to kill them.
And they will give.
And they're going to have a war chest the likes of which we can't imagine. And they will bury every mugwump that gets near them. And they know they can't get the real liberals. They failed. 94% of the Congressional Progressive Caucus was returned. But they slaughtered the Blue Dog.
Well, that's hopeful. When I say play it like the other side, I don't mean just kiss Wall Street's ass and get the money that way. I just mean that the way they've been doing it clearly doesn't work. You're not getting through to anybody. I mean, it's only because the other side is either so savvy and or so crooked, or they're so horrible that we get anywhere. It's never anything proactive from us. It's always reactive. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And that's what has to stop. And I agree. We need a much bigger microphone. But we've talked about that.
Yeah. To be fair, Andy in California is telling me, Reverbo, that George Soros dropped a cool $1 million on Proposition 19 in California. So he sat out giving directly to candidates, but he gave to the proposition, and, you know, maybe he's trying to make it look like he's lying low. Maybe he's just tired of being vilified. Maybe he's tired of wondering when some crazed-ass Beck viewer is gonna gun him down like a dog in the streets. Because there is that. Remember, there is that. This is a violent bunch we're dealing with.
It is a violent bunch. But there are other ways to contribute. You don't have to. Well, I hope before he croaks, he will figure out one of those ways. Because what does happen to George's money when he dies?
It'll go to a bunch of foundations.
Yeah. Well, anyway. I don't know if my head was spinning from the other day or it was just all expected or a combination of the two, but I start wondering about how it's going to affect the people that we need to keep bankrolling us. You know, if this is just another, just a little pebble in the pond, or if this is bigger than that, I don't know. But you're right. While we're goofing off and playing guitars, Carl Rove is these people are getting at it. They're getting on it.
I will never forget the first time Boss Man Wayne said, "Bob, Republicans don't take years off. Republicans don't have off-year elections. They are always on and they are always working." And it's true. You know, I don't know. I may start trying to reach out to some of these people I know about messaging and stuff and try to have, and you know, I'm not an egomaniac. I don't even have to be part of it. But we need, we really do need an honest to God intervention at some of these meetings and confabs and so forth, about why you want to have a legitimate liberal media out there and why they have to be funded.
As idiotic as that sounds.
Well, idiotic that you would have to explain it to them, yes.
Right, that's what I mean. As
but you do.
As that sounds. Yes.
You do. There are organizations out there, and I'm not going to name names, there are organizations out there that spend more money on jelly donuts at receptions in a year than we spend keeping this operation going.
You got that right.
There is more money spent on packets of sunflower seeds, emery boards, little cardboard fans, you know, all the things that you used when you were really an up-and-coming campaigner back in 1906.
That's what it is. That's what I'm trying to say. It's the money that's out of the barn, and it'll never go back in. That's what you have to get your. What you have to exploit and use, and that's what you have to pull together and make that work for you.
And you know, if I ever get the chance to have that conversation, I'll probably ruin everything, Reverbo, because I will go all Glenn Beck and bawl like a baby. And I will tell, and I will tell them about checks that Boss Man Wayne has received with notes that said, "I'll go without popcorn this month."
I mean, I don't want to sound naive that that's suddenly some kind of epiphany I've had, but the messaging problem is that without the money, and without the repetition, and without the hitting people in the gut about it, you end up hoping that your audience has some semblance of intelligence.
And you know, the horn audience does, and that's why I'd love to have the chance to make that speech to say, listen, the people who support this operation don't have $10 of disposable income. They sacrifice $10. They sacrifice $50. They sacrifice $100. They do without because they think that it is worthwhile to have a discussion about what it means to be liberal in America. They sacrifice. They're not dipping into the, they're not coupon clipping on the trust account. And the so-called democratic superstructure can't support something that's already been built and supported that way, then let's give up any notion of populism. Let's give up any notion of really being liberal. And let's give up, more than anything else, let's give up the notion of ever winning again. Because that side wins, Reverbo, because they've got that noise machine. They've got Fox. They got Limbaugh. They got Beck. They got Hannity. They got Savage. They got Bortz. They got Ingram. They got. And never a moment is wasted in wondering if it's worth the money that it costs to keep it going.
Not for a single second.
In the name of everybody who's ever given a penny to this operation, I would like to just bust out all Southern preacher or whatever, except for the swearing part, and tell them what a bunch of miserable, sorry, pathetic excuses for liberals I think they are. Because they're letting people who have to sacrifice to do it do the work, when they could do it without so much as beating a bead of sweat on their brow.
Worse, though. They're ultimately hanging all of those people out to dry. They're hanging them out.
Yeah.
They're just shoving them into the maw of death. It's just awful.
You know, that's one of the reasons it's so hard for me to do the request for contributions on this show, Reverbo, is because I know that I'm asking people to go without things that they can ill afford to go without. And I guess the only reason that I can do that is because I understand what that means. I don't have a 26,000 square foot mansion with a cat. And I know that we're all in this together. And I know that we're struggling, and I guess we're always going to struggle. But damned if we'll give up. Damned if we'll go down without swinging a few haymakers, right?
I'm not sure I hit anything when I swing, but yeah, I'll keep swinging.
Oh, I think we hit. I think we hit.
I don't quite have a big enough checkbook, but I don't think anybody ever gives up. But I think you can get dismayed, and you can get you get real tired of having to explain the obvious.
But I think the one saving grace in all of this, Reverbo, is the fact that this did not happen, you know, this disaster was on November 2nd. This didn't happen because of us. This didn't happen because we didn't try. Because we showed up and we voted and we did. And we helped, and we, and I mean, because I get the emails about, you know, I did this, and can you do that? I get, no. This one ain't on us. And that's one of the things I will not sit still and let any of these, the overfed, overpaid, overindulged pundits hang this one on our neck. Because if anything, it wasn't as bad as it could have been because of us. More of us, and it wouldn't have been at all.
All you got to do is get out and vote, and you beat them. And you beat them.
Showing up is half the battle.
That's it. The numbers are there.
You cannot win if you do not play.
What are we going to call our huge radio station that's going to go up against Fox? We have to think of a name for it. What are we going to call our empire?
I don't know, but I mean, I've got a request for bids out for our official network jackets.
Well, you know me, and I want one of those blazers. I want an enamel pin and the blazer.
Yeah, absolutely, and the little embroidered patch over the pocket of the blazer.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just like Chris Schenkel and those guys used to have with Wide World of Sports.
That's the one. Yeah, we gotta. Yeah, well, it's gonna. We need a blowtorch, and it's just insane that you have to explain that to people. What don't they get about that? Anyway, I'll let you go.
Reverbo, great conversation. Just remember, you know, don't be too hard on them. They've got a lot of jelly donuts to buy.
They do. Well, and as usual, make it personal, my friend.
And you as well. Take care, Reverbo.
All right, later.
Bye now. A little bit of time left in the program tonight. Let's see what yet remains to be said in it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Richard.
Hey, Richard. How are you?
I'm okay. I had some whooping-type cough, but it wasn't whooping cough. It's very, very profound. I'm functional now. So, and it's hot as hell here, by the way. We're having a bit of a heat wave.
We're expecting our first snowflakes just any time now.
I envy you. I don't like heat. And anyway, I got some stuff on my list here. First of all, remember, what has a Republican ever done for you? That's a bumper sticker.
Yep.
And let's keep at it, you know. I think, we have to really be organized and very clever, you know. The Republicans have a lot of people working for them, people like psychologists, and, you know, they're very organized. So, how did your Mountain Party guy do?
Abysmally.
Yeah?
I mean, like 2-3%.
Any hope?
No.
That's really too bad. I heard him on your program. I really like the guy.
Oh, he is. He's a very likable, very intelligent man.
Yeah. Well,
but you know what? This is a hotbed of political one-partiness. We barely support two parties in this state. It may be too much to think that there could be a third one.
Well, I'll hope for you. Anyway, maybe things will change. You know.
Well, frankly, if the Mountain Party wants to succeed, they've got to. I'll just say this: they've got to stop with the vanity candidacies. It is not enough to run somebody for the big hot shot offices. They've got to have people who run for offices that aren't glamorous, that are hard work and damned annoying to perform. Because until they've done those annoying jobs, no one's ever going to trust them to do the big ones. Somebody has got to be county commissioner. Somebody's got to be mayor and find the budget money to get the grass mowed.
Well, speaking of that, the time when I recently went to see George Miller speak, a woman came up to me and asked me to run as a candidate on the Peace and Freedom ticket for anything, you know. I turned her down because I am a commissioner, you know. Already, and that seems to be, according to the Peter Principle, I think that's a good place for me to be.
You have risen to the highest level of your own inefficiency? That's
well,
the Peter Principle, isn't it?
One rung higher, and I would. And in a way, I am inefficient, because I'm a musician sitting there when people talk budgets and money, and my head is swimming. So, but you know, it's a good thing to do, and I think if anybody wants to be in politics, hell, that's a good thing to do. But I look at people who run for school board and they just want to use it as a stepping stone, and that troubles me. You know, I want good people on the school board. I want, you know, people who want to do it. And about the California election, I was actually pretty pleased with it. I don't know.
Oh, you've really got not a whole lot to be upset about in California.
Well, there are a couple of things that
26 is a pain in the ass, and 26 was a bad, bad thing.
And I forget which one that is.
That's the one that requires a 2/3 majority vote now.
Well, for something.
Yeah. For some stuff, but it's a yeah.
Yeah, but it's true, and we had a state proposition, and in my area, you know, a school district. Another proposition, both passed, and both are regressive taxes of the worst kind. And I voted along with the Republicans on both of them, because what they do is they sock you a fee on your car registration every year. So, you know, one of them is $10 to fund the state parks, and the other one is $10 to fund the school district. And, you know, to me, that's just, you know, you don't do that.
No, and the reason you have that kind of the cockamamie stuff is because you've got 13 out there that just sort of hovers over everything, making sure that nobody can get anything adequately funded.
Yep, and that I got a funny story about that. I was working on a job. I was a city employee of the city and county of San Francisco, and my boss was a Republican. Now, I scratch my head and I wonder, how in hell can anybody who works for government be a Republican? I mean, who's bringing home a regular paycheck?
Yeah.
It just doesn't compute to me. But as she was a librarian, you know, college dean of library services, and the department I ran was under her, and we had words, real harsh words for each other when she wasn't my boss and I was picket captain. We had a really dirty strike, but after that she became my boss, and when Prop 13 came around, she was beating the drum to overthrow it. I mean, not to overthrow it, to overthrow it, you know, to kill it. And I had managed to get a secretary, you know, with a lot of hard work, and of course I lost her to Prop 13. So, I mean, it's amazing how people vote against themselves. Like, I heard tenants say that they were going to vote for it because their landlord told them that their rent would go down.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people drink the Kool-Aid, and that's a very interesting thing, and I think we need to be able to understand this phenomenon very well. Because we're not going to be able to flip it unless we do. There's a lot of things that we need to understand, and I don't think we do.
First and foremost is the fact that we don't understand how it is that the Republicans motivate their base.
Well, do you?
Sure. They give them easy, simple things to wrap their simple little, you know. Because the Republican base is Simon Simple and Simon Pure. And they give them easy things like poor little fetuses. They give them easy things like letting the Homer sectionals get married just like you and Marvelline. You reckon them Homer sectionals can ever have love like you and Marvelline have had love these past 25 years?
Yeah.
You give them simple... And frankly, you know, we can do that on our side. We can do that. Look at the words, Richard, that were wasted in trying to talk about the health care issue. When it all boils down to, is this a country where everybody can go to the doctor when he is sick? I want to go to the doctor when I am sick. Therefore, I am a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to watch my fellow Americans die in agony. Therefore, I am a liberal.
Yeah, that's good, and I think we need to get brave and wear our liberals on our shirts, you know. I have some issues on my mind. I'm not going to be real long about it. Deregulation of stuff is really pressing at me because, you know, I read labels when I go to the supermarket. And the first thing I want to report about, remember, I'm the Campbell's soup correspondent.
No, I haven't had a can since.
Yeah, well, I got more for you today.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The first one is, I don't know who's in charge of this governmentally, but there's a couple of Asian supermarkets in my area, and they're really fun. I mean, when I go there, I imagine you're walking through them with me, and we're just checking out all the...
Oh, I love them. I just do.
You know, and here's a package. I'm looking at it right now. It's called Hairu Chestnut. Roast with sugar and skin peeling off. So these are roasted and bagged in China. And the ingredients list starts off with this word, stuff. S-T-U-F-F.
Stuff.
the nutrition begins with something called heat.
Oh, calories. Calories.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's just precious. You know, I got to tell you, though, Richard, if I'm you, I ain't eating them.
Well, there is.
Because God knows, you know, they could be, whoever's translating that label may have translated melamine as sugar.
See, I don't know. I have a friend in
delicious sweet like propylene glycol.
Well, here's the next one is that I went to, first of all, cornflakes corn syrup?
HFCS.
Yeah, high fructose corn syrup. Kellogg's does, and the off-brands do, everything I looked at. But the corn puff things, you know, what do they call them? You know, like the little shredded wheat things?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't have it.
No, because they don't have any sugar in the first place, really.
Well, I think they do, but it's just plain sugar. And the, so I was going around reading the labels. Trader Joe's cornflakes are okay. They don't have junk in them. But the other thing that I noticed, and this is pretty serious, is that we're getting fewer things on the label, so I encourage everybody, really read the labels when you go shopping. The first one was I got some cheese, and it was mozzarella cheese. Came from a company in Ohio, and I don't remember who they were. But the ingredients were not listed on the package. It's a half-a-pound package. And it says on it, to see the ingredients, go to our website. How about that?
Yeah, because you're going to do that.
Yeah, right.
No, see, I understand because I have a guest come in, a friend of mine of long standing, a couple of weeks back, and he and I just have this thing where way, way back when we were first becoming friends, we both realized we both love beets.
Yeah.
So I laid in a stock of pickled beets.
Canned?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I jarred. And there it is. Contents.
High fructose corn syrup?
Yeah. Beets.
Beets?
Water. High fructose corn syrup. Spices. Son of a...
Aren't they sweet enough?
Well, no, I mean, pickled beets are sweetened. But,
yeah.
You know, where's the 13th decimal point price break in the difference between sugar and HFCS?
Well,
so, you know, I am one of those weirdos, Richard, and off I went to their little website, and I sent them a note. Oh, I love your pickled beets. Your pickled beets taste like heaven. I just love them, and I ain't never buying them no more. Because you got that damned HFCS in there,
yeah,
and I won't do that to myself.
I think this is important, and I think that it's important in politics, too. We have a lot of sort of baby blue Democrats, okay? We have our Feinsteins, okay?
Yeah.
And I think we really...
Feinstein's baby blue, where maybe Boxer's navy blue.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Well, Boxer's gotten lighter in recent years. And where was I going with this? I think that we need to threaten these people. We need to threaten our representatives. Do what we want you to do.
But the thing is, I agree with you, but we have to deliver it as a group.
Exactly.
You know, because if one person writes, that's one person who's a crackpot. But, you know, it's like showing up at a school board meeting. If one person shows up to complain about the bus route, you can ignore the one person. But if 100 people show up to bitch about the bus route's going to change.
Exactly. And but I want to throw that out there, that we need to, you know, get our gumption up. This is my feeling. I'm not ordering anybody to do this.
Aren't we just delightfully liberal? I'm not telling anybody to do this.
Well, the thing is, you know,
if it meets with consensus on three successive meetings.
Well, I've been accused. I was accused of throwing my weight around at a nonprofit, so I'm a little conscious of that. And anyway, you're all my friends, and let's put it there. I think what we should do is to go at these people and say, you know, like I want to go to George Miller and I want to say, I want you to be Dennis Kucinich. And I want to go to Barbara Boxer and say, I want you to be...
Senate Majority Leader.
Well, who's that guy in the Midwest who just got nixed?
Feingold.
Feingold, yeah, I want you to be Feingold. You know, it's like we got to tell these people exactly what we want them to do and to be and who to be beholden to, and just tell them, you know, if you don't do this, we're going to vote for a Republican to get your ass out of there. Because if you're
well,
gone,
just if you've got the urge to do that, the only way you're going to succeed is if you get 15 or 20 people to go with you when you go.
Well, that may not be so hard, you know.
No, it may not be, but it's worth working on. Richard, I got a roll. I hate to do it, but I do. God knows, I always love our conversations. Really,
well,
I do.
I got a little more food for you.
Oh, no.
Just throw one more in.
All right.
If you're looking at packaged frozen fish, you're not going to find the country of origin on them anymore. It's been nixed off. The cheese. I called up the cheese company and I said, "Where are the ingredients on the package?" The woman said, "By law, we don't have to put them on if there's no room for them." And I said, "Great, you know, that's fine. I don't have to buy your product either."
Attaboy.
You know, just let them know it. You know, you lost a customer because you were creepy.
There's a million little ways to learn how to be an activist, Richard, and I think you've made it. Yes.
Well, I do this as much as I can. The thing with the frozen fish, you know, I called them up, I mean, one of these companies, and they said, well, it costs us too much money to save the country because we buy fish from all these other countries, you know, and it's too much trouble because we change our source every day. And I said, well, I'm not going to buy your fish because it's probably from China, you know, and I think that's, but the thing is, I don't know who...
Fish with delicious mercury flavor.
Yeah, the thing, I don't know
and who's skins.
Responsible for the deregulation. And we got to find out and get on these people.
Well, Thanksgiving's coming, and I will bust my ass trying not to buy a Chinese turkey, but I bet I wind up with one. Richard, take care, my friend.
Good night.
Bye now. Calling from Northern California, that's our buddy Richard. And let's see if we've got... Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
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 Yes. I'm calling because a little while before you mentioned about going and confronting these people, the politicians and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, back in the old days when Mr. Bush was the president, supposedly, a bunch of us once went one time, and we mau-mau'd Nancy Pelosi when she was on her book tour over the subject of impeachment.
Oh, and she hated that.
Well, she wasn't happy about it. The occasion was that she was on her book tour in, like, three cities or something like that, and she had written her book about, you know, women achievers or something like that. And... you know, she was promoting her book, and the format, this is in San Francisco, And the format was that she was being interviewed by some guy that was on the local NPR station.
Mm-hmm.
Escapes me at the moment. You know, he was supposed to ask her questions, and she would answer questions and all this. And then there was a bunch of us who went there with the intent of confronting her over her, you know, her remark that impeachment was off the table when it came to Bush, you know. And so we let her know that there was a lot of very strong feeling out there about that. And at first she kind of took it like a sport, you know. She says, oh, yes, I respect her passion, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And then after a while, I think that the people running this event got a little tired of, you know, people constantly yelling at them and so forth. And there were a few people who were taken out by the police and so forth.
Well, there's always, I mean, that risk always exists, and that's why this has to be done civilly, because we as liberals will never get away with the kind of extremist behavior that the teabaggers got away with. Can you imagine a liberal carrying a loaded firearm to a town hall meeting? We'd be under a jail somewhere. We'd be in Guantanamo getting waterboarded.
You know, I've actually thought about that. You know, what if somebody brought a loaded firearm to a McCain rally or something like that?
Well, that's a good way to get shot.
Well, in the case of the people who brought the firearms to the Obama appearance, you know, they had actually told the police about it in advance, said they were going to be there, and this was in Arizona, you know, where open carry is legal, right? So, you know, they showed up. They were behind whatever, you know, the distance and all that, and the police were watching them and all this, and you know, as you know, nothing happened. But I kind of wondered what would happen if you did the same thing at a McCain rally. You know, you told the police that you were going to show up with firearms, and you know.
Well, do you remember what would happen when liberals would show up to protest George Bush? They got put in a First Amendment zone about 6 miles from wherever George was.
Well, I remember that, and I remember the incident. I believe it was it in Charleston, West Virginia.
Yep, where a t-shirt alone was enough.
Right, and they got arrested, and they went to court, and they were found not guilty, and the mayor of Charleston, you know, apologized to them and all that. You know, who was a Republican, because I guess that they were from, I forget where it was, but they were planning to move to West Virginia and all that, and I guess I ended up moving there, but, I mean, I do remember all that, you know.
Indeed.
And I thought about the question of, yeah, what would happen if somebody showed up with firearms at a McCain rally or, you know, somebody else like, I don't know, some teabagger person, you know, in a place.
There would be trouble. I hate to do it, but I got to roll on because I'm fresh out of time.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. I hope you'll call in again.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
And to the remaining blinking lights, my sincere apologies. We'll pick it up again tomorrow. I gotta continue to try to get these computer problems solved. If you haven't noticed, there haven't been any clips being played and damned little music. That's because we got a sick computer here. And what it's going to take to fix, I don't know yet. We got one that hasn't been fixed and another one sick. Hey, that's exciting. But thanks for joining in, and may this show just went by in a hurry. Thank you very much. Thanks to everybody who makes this happen. That all begins with you who contribute to this program. I hope you understand that I do know what you sacrifice to keep this going. I do know, and we are all so grateful that we can't, it's difficult to begin to express it, but grateful we are. Thanks to our moderator in the chat room, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Welcome back to the struggle, Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. To Reverbo, our cavalcade of crazy columnists at headonradionetwork.com. To Matt Osborne at osborneinc.com. My head writer, thanks go to David in Tennessee. Also, of course, always thanks to our chief engineer, chief audiologist, webmaster, web designer, man of many talents, John Fox. And thanks to Ben Birch, a man who single-handedly saved liberal radio on the Internet. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.